Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink, and this is the Christogenia Open Forum. It is Monday, May 3rd, 2010. I suspect the weather, it's way too nice to be inside. I know the crowd's going to thin out as the weather gets nicer. I can't. We've had 80-degree days here in upstate New York in May. It's incredible. And I don't think we had that many warm days in a row in the middle of the summer last year. Planting season might move up to April next year, the way things are going. How you doing, Bruce?
Wonderful. Praise Yahweh.
What are you up to? How you doing? Yahweh.
Yeah. Keep myself out of trouble and, you know, at odds against this world, you know, with the truth, you know. Yeah, working. But I just made an audio file of your 10 races of Genesis. And,
the race of Genesis 10.
Yes, sir.
10 races of Genesis.
There's only
one race in Genesis, and actually there's two, but the one's good and the other's bad. So
the bad figs.
Yeah, Genesis 10, they're all one race. That's okay. That's good. That's good. Maybe I'll download that and put it on my site. I should download some of your recordings and put them with the documents on the site.
Yeah, well, there's 37 of Clifton's done, and when I first started, I made a couple of mistakes, like your website was wrong on spelling his name. But there's 37 of Clifton's newsletters done from actually about 40 of them. And then I have 5 of Henry Ford's, the International Jew. I have 5 done of his. I'm going to do 80 of those. So, but anybody, as long as they're Anglo-Saxon and white, can do these if they have an articulate and they really love, you know, to express, you know, reading.
Well, I'm slowly but surely learning that people don't like the click. I can't imagine, like the way I have Christogenia laid out, I can't imagine it being easier to find things on such a – it's a big website. I mean, there's 700 published documents, whether they be just commentaries or papers or a translation or an essay or an audio. There's 700 published documents. Now, I have an internet radio menu at the top, and from there you can get to any one of the programs and find the entire audio archive for that program. And if I go there, most of the programs have between a dozen and two dozen downloads. But I put a program that Clifton and I did on the front page a few weeks ago, and that program has 298 downloads. So just for the hell of it, I did an experiment. 2 nights ago, I put, and Pilgrim kind of inspired me to do this, even though she don't know it. 2 nights ago, I put my reading of Tertullian's De Spectaculis on the front page. When I put it there, it had 16 downloads. And now it has 137. So I might just put every program on the front page of my site.
Oh, yeah. Folks,
because
what?
I'm learning that people don't like the click. I can't get over it. It's hard to find this stuff, but they seem to only read what's on the front page, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think we all like to find our little corner, and that's, you know, we call this personality. I don't know. It's just kind of like it's okay to have some personality, but if it's not out open, you know, with your brothers and sisters, it tends to degenerate. And people really love audio files of your works, of words that point in the way of.
Well, yeah, a lot of people spend a lot of time on the road or a lot of time in a vehicle like you do, right? You're a truck driver. That there's
mm-hmm.
There's another truck driver that's been coming by. He was on a program last night. He stopped by. I think it was his first live program. He's not here tonight, but he's a truck. He's a an appliance repairman that spends a lot of time traveling, and they like to, yeah, you know, it's good not to waste their time, to listen to something constructive, something other than the top 40 country Brooks and Dunn song, same song every 10 minutes. You know, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't take that stuff for more than an hour, or even for that long, probably.
Yeah, a couple minutes would do me in.
Oh, we have Pilgrim here.
Oh, good.
Hello, Pilgrim.
It doesn't show me on the phone.
Oh, well, you're on it.
I know, yeah, I can hear you.
Your screen's probably frozen.
On the phone. I knew I'd rub off on you eventually.
Well, I saw you mention something good about that program, and I said, you know, with all those downloads that show to Clifton and I did, I should put that on the front page. I might dig out some old programs and throw them on the front page, some of the ones that I think are the better ones.
Well, you know the problem, it's not that people not only want to hear sound bites, they want to see in glimpses. So, like, when you put things on a website, if the line even wraps, I think this requires the eye to move back and forth and read. Whereas if you give them little short blocks of text that's all in one line with space around it so they don't have to hunt and peck for things, they are much more likely to go for it and check it out.
Yeah, you know, it's incredible. I've seen the newspapers doing that. I've seen newspapers articles online doing that, and I wonder about that. It's are we really that dumb today? You know, I'm not trying to brag or anything, but I can read a paragraph at a time.
Yes.
I can look at a paragraph. I don't know, 15, 20 lines, and I know what it says.
But that is not most people.
See these newspaper articles online, and it's two lines break, two lines break, two lines break.
Yes.
And I'm like, what the hell is this?
And you know why? Because they're all used to looking at, like, an icon, like in a game, an icon stands for something. And they click on the icon, and they know what it's going to do. But when you give them whole sentences to read, you know, and wrap back and read some more, it's becoming too time-consuming. Make any sense?
Incredible. It's incredible. I know. It's incredible. We are the dumbest society ever, I swear.
And when you're a text-based website, it becomes a little challenging because you have to have all that writing, like that sermon or whatever, in one place, neat by itself, so they can click and go to it. But getting to it, they can't have a lot of obstacles in the way to figure out where it is. If they will read it when they get there.
Too many turns in a road, huh?
That's right.
I guess people aren't reading. I'm going to have to put every program, yeah, you know, maybe not the forum calls, but I mean the programs that I've done with Eli and you know, the regular programs, the teaching programs, I think I'm going to put them all on the front page. Because they're getting, I put this program with Clifton, this BIWF program. I know it would be a little popular because of the subject matter, but most of the programs on my site that are in the archives have anyways between 8 and 30 downloads.
Mm-hmm.
And I stick this program on the front page I did with Clifton, and it's got 298 downloads in about 3 weeks.
But maybe don't put the whole program, you know, the whole listing for the program. Put an index of the program titles.
Well, no. As I do a program, I'll make sure it gets a certain amount of time on the front page, so it gets pushed off the bottom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or if you want, you know, like I said, if you want to do more long-term availability, have a short snippet index where when they click on the title on that one line of a few words, it takes them to the page with that download.
Well, all they have to do is click on Internet Radio, and they see a whole list of the different programs. I don't know.
But if I just have Galatians 4, Galatians 5 and 6, Galatians 7, and I just click on Galatians 4, it takes me there. You know what I mean? Minimize reading. Try not to wrap those lines.
Yeah, well, it's real learning is in old, dusty, thick books.
Mm-hmm.
And guys would look at me asking, you know, how do I learn this and that? you read a lot of old, dusty, thick books, and I get all these strange, odd stares, and your eyes turn glassy.
Yeah.
Can I just take the pill or see the movie? Or
yeah, isn't there something on YouTube?
It's incredible. It's people just don't read anymore. I don't know, but I can't believe I put this program on my front page 2 nights ago. It's a 3-week-old program, and it goes from 16 downloads to 137 in no time at all.
They're used to moving on impulses and quick visuals.
I guess so.
And it's kind of it's a discipline like the muscles of our brain. We're not just our intellectual part of us, but the spiritual. We need to exercise. It's just every day, not torturing ourselves. It's not a torture. It's a blessing to exercise our brains and our blood and our bones.
And everybody's multitasking while they're doing everything on top of it.
I don't think they're multitasking at anything that's useful.
No. No, it's a habit. It's just like a hamster on a wheel. They're just used to yakking and chatting over in this screen and YouTubing in this screen and get up and deal with the kids and something and then, you know, back to the TV or the computer. And they're just always running around like, you know, mice in a little maze.
Well, you can multitask certain things and still be productive. I limit the things that I multitask. I might do some emails while I'm doing an open forum program. Or do some reading or resize some graphics or stuff that like that I have to do. But I can't watch YouTubes while I'm doing an open forum program because YouTubes require, a couple of senses.
Yeah.
You can't multitask three, four things that all require 2-3 senses. It don't work.
And see, I think the problem is you get addicted to the process of the multitasking, so you have no attention span.
When I was away, I didn't see any TV for a long time, and then one day I was watching some videos, and how many scenes, like 50 different scenes in 2 minutes, and that right there made me think, well, that's why none of these kids have any attention span.
Yeah.
Because they're not used to seeing. To observing any one thing for more than a couple of seconds. It's crazy.
Well, you don't absorb or analyze or think. No. You experience quick.
Yeah, it seems to me like Satan trying to flood their little brains and just cause an information glut.
He wants to keep us in that little space we call ourselves where we can be comfortable. And that's the very thing that's wrestling against the spirit. Maybe that's why Jacob wrestled with Yahweh, with the angel. What was that? Oh, that's your dog, huh, Bill?
Uh-huh. No, mine.
My dog's on program nights, he's not allowed down here until at least the time my mother goes to bed. So he'll probably be down around 10.
What kind of dog do you have, Pilgrim?
Oh, I have a killer, yeah. I have several small dogs now. I have Maltese and a little Yorkie.
Oh, well, I saw Mike and Renee in New Mexico. They're driving up to Wisconsin.
Are they going to Wisconsin or out of New Mexico? Okay.
Yeah, I was driving to L.A. from Ohio, and I met up with them there. And he mentioned he saw Pilgrim at the tea party there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Did he?
No.
Was that Pilgrim?
Saw Patricia. He saw Patricia at the tea party.
Somebody's getting us confused.
That's me.
He met Patricia at a tea party in Vegas. He didn't. Pilgrim, she's a few hours away at least.
Oh.
But no long drive across the desert.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Did they have fun at their tea party?
I think so. Mike put his sign on the back of that bus, says Israel was a nut.
Well, yeah, they went to the tea party. They both went to the tea party. Their motive was to pass out their own alternative literature rather than to participate in the, you know, rah-rah Sarah Palin. Three cheers for the neocon Jews because they're better than the Bolshevik Jews.
That's about the same kunan of it, isn't it?
Well, it's two ends of the same eggplant, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the eggplant metaphor purposely, not because I couldn't think of anything else, but that's what the Jews are. They're black.
Yeah.
Patricia is a tea bagger. No, Patricia's not a tea bagger.
Okay.
So what else is going on? Why don't somebody call in and stimulate this program with some interesting questions or conversation or debate or something, anything.
No, I didn't slump. I don't know what's going on. What's going on out there?
Why are you slumped? I live in my own shell. I don't know what's going on. I know there's a pretty bad oil leak in the in the Gulf of Mexico.
I'm slumped on the computer, but I don't know anything that's going on out there.
There's all sorts of conspiracy theories about it. I mean, Goldman Sachs sold the Gulf short. I didn't know that you could sell the Gulf short. You might be able to sell all the oil stocks short. Sell the Gulf short. Yeah, there's all kinds of conspiracy theories, and Iran wants to help us, and they're offering help with the they could save Florida from an eco disaster, you know. I got a friend that lives in Panama City. They actually had a town meeting there last night, and I didn't get to talk to them very long today, but they had a town meeting, expressing concern about the coming flood of oil that hit the beaches that they expect to cause a disaster. And that's the people on the Gulf Coast are very concerned.
Well, I don't know.
They probably should be 200,000 gallons of oil a day spilling into the water. That's or whatever. It's some obscene amount.
Yeah. How did all of this? How did this start?
Well, it's a they're going through 5,000 feet of water to drill this oil, at the ocean floor, and evidently the pressure when they reached the oil was a lot greater than they thought. That's the short story that I got from what I read. I haven't read much about it.
And who's doing this drilling? Not us, I take it.
BP, British Petroleum.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, God forbid we should drill any oil.
Well, there are actually several oil companies operating in the Gulf. But it's I think that the technology is still far ahead of them, and that they don't have it. They can't cap this problem. So evidently they have a lot to learn, and they just it's like gambling. They gamble, nothing's going to go wrong.
Oh well.
That's the American, the modern American Jewish-led or the modern Western Jewish-led corporation. Do everything as cheaply as possible and hope nothing goes wrong. And if you can, if something does go wrong, you just get better lawyers than the government has or something. I don't know.
And it doesn't matter because all of the top execs will walk away with big, fat packages anyway. So, who cares?
Papa Gad said the Jews should love that black oil on white sand. Yeah, they love to pollute everything, don't they? Especially if it's white.
Oh, Gerald had an accident. What happened?
Gerald,
I have
okay?
No idea. I mean, I saw Gerald come online a few hours ago on Skype, but I don't know.
Titanic said Gerald had an accident today and hurt himself. He's listening in a chair, telling me what to do. Oh, I have to call him. Talked to him yesterday. I know he was waiting out that hurricane, those tornadoes down there.
Oh, well, that'll mix the oil up a little.
Yeah.
The whole Caribbean will look like a big black salad.
Yeah, they had a whole big mess of tornadoes there in Gerald's neighborhood.
Okay, I didn't hear anything about that. Hopefully Gerald's house is still there.
He should be safe.
I know Gerald doesn't live in a trailer, so he should be safe.
Yeah, no, he's okay. It stopped before it got to him.
I heard there's enough oil in this country that it can support us for hundreds of years.
Well, yeah, but they don't like to drill oil in this country. And the oil companies, I really think that they probably do finance the enviro weenies so that they don't have to drill oil here, so that they do keep the price inflated. And I think that's all purposeful. There's no doubt. Clifton,
yeah.
I can't remember the details offhand, but Clifton did publish that there's some guy that works for the oil industry that gave, you know, one of those tell-all type papers he wrote and published that a lot of people give a lot of credibility to. But I don't care. I don't care what they do. I hope all the wells blow up tomorrow. I don't care. So I don't follow it and I don't get involved in it. I fill my gas tank up about once every other month. I don't go anywhere. I just looked at how many miles I put on my car this month, 140 miles. So I guess I'm doing pretty good.
Gosh, I don't put 50.
Yeah, that was a lot, 140 miles. I didn't think it was much at all.
A mile is a lot.
But I went to see a cousin, and that was like 40 miles in one day. So that's probably what did it. I went to see a cousin about 3 weeks ago. He lives about 19 miles away. And then we went and got the dog. That was the rest of the miles. The dog was an hour and a half away, the puppy.
Yeah.
So that was, he's only here about a month. So those two trips were probably all my mileage. I'd rather walk. Well, some places you just can't walk to. Not unless you have a 4-day supply of food and some extra clothes.
Actually, you know, the internet has been a blessing in a lot of ways. I have to leave my house a lot.
No, I leave my house once a week. I go 3 miles to my P.O. box if I make it once a week. And I might go to town once every other week for some cookies. Or a monthly trip to Walmart. That's about it. I don't even get anything there half the time. I just go to get out of the house.
Yeah.
And see all the circus freaks, because all the circus freaks in town are in Walmart. All the circus freaks in the whole county congregate at Walmart. It's funny.
Yeah, it's a show.
Out there in the Northwest, I deliver to a lot of distribution centers, food. I was at this one place yesterday, and they had the green light on after they moved all the yogurt off the trailer. And I went inside, and there's a bunch of latrinos running around like cockroaches, And I said, hey, am I ready to go now? Shibo, amigo, como esta? Well, I don't know. What are you saying? This is America, and they got all these, speaking the Ooga Booga language, That shouldn't be allowed.
I'm just hearing that, I mean, no, it shouldn't be allowed. The people shouldn't be in our country.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't be allowed. We're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There should have been an uprising when they signed the Immigration Act in 1964 or 5 or whenever the hell it was. The Teddy Kennedy Immigration Act.
Yeah.
It may have been 68. That was an evil act, and that flooded this country with aliens.
About 150 million.
So, Mill, where do you think Teddy is right now?
Where do I think Teddy Kennedy is right now?
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be one of those dogs outside the wall. I'm sorry. I can't believe that he could be forgiven. That man did more evil to
this
nation.
Of course not. But, you know, Enoch speaks of all of these areas where various angels are locked up and souls are waiting and this and that. And so, you know, there's got to be some nice holding tank that Teddy is sitting in waiting at the moment. There must
I wouldn't want to be Teddy Kennedy before Yahshua Christ. I just wouldn't want to be.
No.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's all the fulfillment of Scripture, but I wouldn't want to be him. Yeah, you know, like Christ said, it's necessary for trials to come upon the earth, but woe to him through whom the trials come.
Yes.
So I would not want to be Ted Kennedy before the judgment seat of Christ. It just ain't going to be very comfortable. He's going to be sweating cannonballs.
I just hope he's way uncomfortable while he's waiting.
Well, yeah, he should be. He should have to absorb the odors of a room full of Mexicans for the rest of his for the rest of time.
Mm-hmm. And more. So I'm looking at rents here, and they don't have anything interesting either.
That and Nancy Pelosi's breath, and a few other parts. Yeah, it's terrible. It's. Eddie Kennedy is probably one of the biggest traitors. I mean, Woodrow Wilson's number one as far as I'm concerned. Well, Woodrow Wilson is the American Nero.
But I wonder if there's like a special holding tank for really particularly egregious individuals.
I don't believe Franklin Roosevelt was a traitor because he's a Jew.
Yes.
I believe he's probably a kike, and he can't be a traitor because he's an enemy in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the enemy you let into your kitchen cannot be a traitor.
No.
Shame on you for letting the enemy into the kitchen.
You have to be on a side to be a traitor to it.
Right.
So it's not the enemy at the gate, it's the enemy within the gate, right?
Well, right. But Woodrow Wilson was a traitor and Teddy Kennedy was a traitor.
Hmm.
And I'm sure his brothers hate him. I'm sure John Kennedy would absolutely despise him. Because Teddy became everything that John was trying to warn about when he died. And I'm sure that John probably didn't find out about many of those things until he got into power.
Yeah, Teddy was a weakling.
Incredibly so. Well, I'm sure Mary Jo Kopechick or whatever her name was, she'll have the last laugh.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, it's amazing. Every big city has a Martin Luther King Road and a Rosa Parks Road, you know. Every time I pass out, I just say, damn niggers. They have them all over the country, in every big city.
Well, you know, somebody wrote in the chat room that Teddy didn't do anything to go after his brother's assassins, and that's perfectly right. Teddy became their whore, and that's why Christ said that he who would lose his life shall find it. And he who would seek to save his life, which is what Teddy did, kissed Jew ass so that he didn't suffer the fate that his brothers did and did anything they wanted. He who would seek to save his life, that's Teddy, shall lose it. So that's why Christ said that. And Teddy and the Kennedy brothers are the perfect example.
I'm checking news sites. There's nothing very interesting here. Oh, my gosh, there's Bill White on Judicial Inc.
No, I haven't looked at much news. Oh, John's on the line. Let me acknowledge him.
What?
Kaiser, how you doing?
Hey, Bill, how's it going?
All right.
Just wanted to join the call here.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's callers are scarce. I mean, I'm not denigrating you guys by any means, but it'd be nice to have somebody with something to add once in a while.
Well, I have a few questions. This is still relatively new to me, the SCI stuff.
Sure.
Well, one question, Bill, is like I'm seeing how this stuff is really going to fly with some people. Without answering, where did the other races come from?
Where did the other races come from?
Right.
I believe that they are all the product of the rebellion against God and miscegenation and race mixing and what we see the results.
So some of the rebellion.
That's scriptural. That's scriptural. Scriptural, and it's what the apocryphal books of scripture indicate. Yeah, you know, if you read the Genesis account, God only made Adam. Yet when Adam was created, there was already a tree here of the knowledge of good and evil, which is the experience of good and evil. Which tells me that there was that means there's at least one other race already here. And if you look in if you look in the anthropological record, what we basically, I mean the real findings from what I can ascertain, what we have Cro-Magnon man and Neanderthal man, and we have a few ape-like creatures in Africa that might be 2 million years old or 3 million years old, or it doesn't matter. But we have, in the 100,000 years before the advent of the white man and the consciousness of history, which only we have, that's when all these other races just appeared in various places rather rapidly, rather suddenly. I mean, 100,000 years on a geological timescale is rather sudden. But they've all appeared here within the last 100,000 years, and we were not here.
Okay. Now, the account in Genesis, then, of the rebellious angels and in Enoch and all that, this happened long before man even came on the scene, is what you're saying.
Well, I believe so, because they were already here when Adam was put here, when the white race was created.
Well, that would make sense because it said Eve gave some of the fruit to Adam afterwards. So, in other words, there was a female of the type.
Well, that could mean one of two things, and it can be argued, but it can't be proven either way. It could mean that Adam accepted Eve herself and had sex with her after she had had sex in adultery with somebody else, which that would be enough of a sin to
right.
cause Adam's fall from the grace of God. But it doesn't have to be that way. It could be that he also, at the beckoning of his wife, partook in sex with this other race. That could be also. And no matter which side of the line you want to fall on, nobody can prove the case one way or the other. There just isn't enough information.
Well, true. But, yeah, I know. It said she gave the fruit to him. I mean, just to, state what happened. She gave some of the fruit later to him. So, in other words, it might have been another person.
Well, yes, and that's what I'm trying to say. It might have been. It can't be proven which way it was, but either way, it's just as evil. But, yes, that's right. Eve definitely had sex with somebody of another race. There's no doubt.
Okay, well, now, what about, Semaza? Was that Satan's name in Enoch? Samyaza,
right. I'm not an expert at Enoch. I've read it, and it's been a couple of years. But Enoch goes into long lists of all these fallen angels, and whether it's symbolic or whether it's to be taken literally, it's immaterial to me. I mean, I believe the scripture. Don't get me wrong, but whether it's symbolic or to be taken literally. It doesn't matter to me. It's the substance of the story that matters more than the details.
True. But I like some of the details. I think they're provided for a reason, so I'd like to get it.
Well, yes, they are, and they need a lot more study, by not only by me, by others.
Hmm. Well, it's the point I'm trying to get to is, it's like when now I thought it was possible that Semyaza had sex with. What Eve herself, that he seduced her.
Well, right, that could be it. And it could be, the Targums say the name is Samael, which is similar. And okay. There's one chief of these angels named Azazel who stated several times in the Book of Enoch, blame it all on Azazel. And that appears several times in Enoch, and it happens to be the word translated scapegoat 4 times in Leviticus chapter 16. It probably doesn't have to be scapegoat at all. It probably should be, Yahweh saying one goat for me and one goat for Azazel instead of one goat for a scapegoat.
Okay. Well, Azazel must be one of these leader angels, then.
Well, right. In the Book of Enoch, he is described that way. But the word also can mean a goat that's blamed for something, which the King James took literally as scapegoat. But, you know, every Hebrew name has a meaning, which and many of these ancient, these names we find in Scripture have meanings that are, surprisingly describe the lives that those people led. So how the names were used, or maybe they are designations, maybe they are titles instead of proper names, because they describe people of the sort that the word describes.
So in all those angel names, there were so many and it was so hierarchical, which ones do you think really refer to the one we think of as the head angel we usually call Lucifer or Satan? And most people assume he's the one that Eve was seduced by in the garden, but maybe not then.
Well, right, but does the scripture insist that we have one particular leader? The Book of Enoch describes several different leaders. There's the Samael, and there's the Azazel character isn't even described by Enoch. He's there, but he's not one of the chiefs, really. But he's blamed for everything by Yahweh.
Well, there's the one that was before the throne of God, and, his pipes were magnificent, and he created great music, and, my brain isn't drawing a blank, but which one I'm referencing? Mentioned in the our regular Bible, not in Enoch.
Oh, the king of Tyre?
Yeah, you might be confusing the description of the King of Tyre or the description who's not Satan.
Yeah.
He may have been a Satan, but he's not Satan. He's the King of Tyre.
Yeah, I don't think it's that, but I'm probably getting it all fuzzed up here.
There's a dragon character in Revelation chapter 12.
Mm-hmm.
But is that one individual fighting with the dragon, and the dragon fought his messenger? Yeah, because it's in contradistinction to Michael, it might be interpreted that way.
Boy, there are going to be a lot of details that need to get filled in when this is all over.
well, right. What we have is symbols, and the symbols are definitely meaningful when we compare them to our history and to the races of people here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have one race of people who has played the role of this dragon, the role of this serpent, all through history. And it's very clear who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that much is spelled out really clearly.
But what the details are 7,000 years ago, we only have symbols that represent, and we have the story found in the Book of Enoch. And some other Hebrew apocryphal literature.
And Enoch is full of laundry lists of things. laundry yes. list of the heavens and the stars and moving through gates and
Well, yes, and like John says, there's probably a reason why we were given all that detail, but
yeah.
whether or not we're smart enough, I mean, I'm probably not smart enough to figure it out.
Well, it's like the calendar question at this point. You know, and all of this wrangling over lunar or solar or lunar solar, and they can't even tell with absolute certainty if a year is supposed to be a jubilee year or is this really Passover? Clearly, if we were to be living by a precise calendar, we would have been left a precise calendar to work with, wouldn't we?
Right, and I don't get involved in calendrical disputes because they are simply endless. And everybody who in the vanity of men's hearts, they think they could prove the calendar. And I'm sorry, I could throw a monkey wrench in anybody's proof of the calendar.
And like you say, you know, when you read Enoch and you get these chapters after chapters of this star goes here and this sun moved through that gate and this one went through that gate, maybe it meant something then, but I don't know how you would untangle it now.
Right, and I see that as, you know, poetic language representing a truth, but not necessarily literally scientifically true.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like Genesis chapter 1, it is a brief description of the creation from an earthly perspective. That it's not false by any means, but it's surely not complete. It's a poetic description of the creation from a man's earthly perspective and what was revealed to that particular man.
Well, and it's also like a lot of these things, and everyone's so hungry to know details, which is understandable, but then you start getting into these things like all of the measurements and details of the pyramid and what they symbolize, all of which may have legitimacy, but apparently we don't have enough information to come to any conclusive explanations about it at this point. And people start running around, well, like the blood on the mercy seat kind of thing. And, you know.
Well, I think the whole Ron Wyatt thing, I mean, Eli has, he's zealous and he's Yeah, you know, he believes that he's strong in the faith, and I'm not going to doubt that. But the whole Ron Wyatt thing, I think he's a sham. I think he's a straight fraud.
Well, I think a lot of these things are, there's not either enough information or the information is questionable that, you know, we have to put the brakes on as far as how much emphasis we put on it and how much we rely on it. They may be interesting peripheral side issues, but we always come back to the same point where, we're just going to have to sit here and have faith in Yahweh.
Well, absolutely. It's I don't need any archaeological evidence. I have all the archaeological evidence I need.
Yeah.
To back up the history that I profess, and
yeah.
and the yeah, you know, concerning the Bible, scripture, and I've said this before, prophecy is not there so that we could read it and find out what's going to happen tomorrow. Prophecy is there so that we could read it and believe that God is true because we see its fulfillment. And we don't see every fulfillment of every prophecy, but there are sure as hell enough fulfillments that are totally evident of enough prophecy that we should, any reasonable man should, once he sees this, believe that God is true.
True.
And that's why we have prophecy, the sure word of prophecy, as Peter told us. And when you read Daniel chapters 2 and 7 or Daniel chapter 9 or certain chapters in Isaiah and Jeremiah, and Micah, that were fulfilled to the word. I can't explain every prophecy, but I can explain those, and that's all I need. I mean, that's plenty. The fact that the behavior of certain groups, that the group identities and how they act is so clear in the Bible, and when you identify those groups today, you see that behavior, those same behavioral patterns have carried down perfectly in those groups for 5,000 years. And
yeah,
you better believe through seed line.
It's obviously not just a cultural thing. It's a genetic thing.
It's absolutely genetic. The Jews have been living in Europe for 2,000 years. They've been living amongst Christians in Europe, and they're still serpents.
Yeah.
And they still act like they did 2,000 years ago and 5,000 years ago and 800 years ago.
Well, it's like thinking that you can integrate Negroes in with whites and you're going to have a change. Well, it doesn't happen, does it?
Well, they'll be changed, all right.
Well, you're not changing the Negro. The Negro basically is staying pretty much the same as he has always been.
Well,
he may come up a hair, but not much.
Well, yeah. Well, you're going to lower the standards of whatever mongrel is going to come from that union.
Sure.
And then, you know, and then raise the standards of whatever blacks bring, which is not much.
But they basically don't change what they are. They basically stay what they are, is my point.
I'd like to address something in the forum before it escapes us. They're talking about this, and this point Clifton raised with me on the telephone the other day. Kent is talking about, you know, speaking of blood on the mercy seat, I think Eli's guest, talking about that Jonathan Gray character, said something like, Christ's blood had to drip on the mercy seat. And let me explain the point Clifton raised the other day. They are confusing the Day of Atonement with the Day of Passover. The Passover was about sacrifice. It wasn't about atonement. And the mercy seat represents the Day of Atonement, not the Day of the Sacrifice. So Christ's blood did not have to drip on a mercy seat. And that's all I want to say in reference to that. And that was, I thought, an excellent point that Clifton raised on the phone with me the other day. And Clifton's about to explain this in a couple of papers. I'm not trying to put pressure on him because he's listening to me, but Clifton is in the middle of writing up some papers on the Ron Wyatt thing. Oh, okay, Pilgrim, I'm sorry. I just had to get to that. Go on.
Oh, that's cool. No, I was just rambling. You know, my main point was that, you know, it's like you say, it's a genetic thing. You can put those blacks in with whites and you might raise them a hair, but they basically remain what they are. They don't really change. And you were saying a sure word of prophecy, well, it can't be sure until it's completed, right?
Well, right. But it's, I mean, we've seen the completion of so many prophecies that you, I mean, in my mind, I'd have to be an idiot if I didn't believe that the rest of them were going to come true.
Oh, yeah. And you've seen enough and you know enough that whatever is lacking is in our understanding or ability to interpret the word as delivered to us, or whether or not it's been fully clarified for us at this point, and a lot of it hasn't. But my only point with all this stuff is that, you know, it's interesting, and I understand the allure of it, and everyone wants to know answers and wants to get into arcane knowledge and know what went on and what's behind everything, but we're not going to know it at this point, and it can just take you down some very dangerous side roads that can lead you into a lot of delusion and create other problems for you. That's my
problem. Well, right, but
problem.
That's why we're told to study to show thyself approved. And you know, to read the scripture and read the Bible, and once you come to the understanding of what it says, it's difficult for you to travel down those side roads.
Yeah.
I think, from my perspective.
Or you just sort of, you kind of go, okay, that's enough. I don't want any more of it right now, you know?
Yeah, I was told by the Most High, who came down and became flesh in Yahshua, never to go down a rabbit hole, because he brings himself down to earth, but he doesn't shrink himself down to what do you call it, degeneracy in questioning things that are wrong questions. And there's a lot of wrong questions people ask. Right?
Well, a lot of people that go down those wrong paths, they only understand half of Scripture. And they want to pretend the other half isn't there or doesn't matter.
Yeah, I've seen that many times. A lot of times it sets up some false authority of some kind. And
well, the same thing happens. You know, they all want something in front of them that's tangible. And Yahweh just doesn't seem to have left us a whole lot of relics around that we could prop up on an altar and examine and worship in place of him. And running around looking for, you know, mercy seats with blood on them just seems a little, you know.
Right. It boils down to being another idol.
Yeah.
And that's why I have no care at all for any relics or idols.
You know, there's the Shroud of Turin. The you know, you can.
Right. It's an idol. And
no one's
ark. The merchants of Turin made a whole lot of money over the centuries promoting that shroud and attracting people to come see it. And that's what the temples of the ancient world were all about.
Mm.
If you really pick up the book of Acts and read the story about Paul in Ephesus and the temple of Artemis and Demetrius the silversmith, you'll find that they loved this temple of Artemis not because they really cared about this whore, that this dead whore that they worshipped. They loved this temple of Artemis because people flocked from all over the world to come see it and spend their money in this town. And all these people had a nice, comfortable living off of this temple. And every museum, every hall of fame, every house of relics is basically an idol's temple. The Metropolitan Museum of Modern Art, it's an idol's temple. I'd blow it up tomorrow. It wouldn't matter to me one bit. All of these, the Football Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they are entities created so that these cities or towns can suck people into this area and spend their money.
Yeah.
That's why they make museums. That's why they make these damn things. They're idols temples, every one of them.
Think of all the merchandise they can sell with team logos on them.
Absolutely. And the Shroud of Turin, yeah, you know, the ancient churches, if you read the early Christian writers, and it's not really spoken about overtly, but it's absolutely clear that they were, and I'm talking about writers like Bede,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and people, you know, his contemporaries. Yeah, these missionaries would go and convert these people, and they'd have a church, and then they would want to get some of the relics of the apostles, some of the bones of the saints. So they would petition the Pope.
Yes, yes.
They would petition the Pope, and they'd go get some bones and send it to this church, and they call it the bones of Peter,
mm-hmm.
or the shards from Paul or James. And they would put these things up on a pedestal, and thousands of people would come from all over just to see these bones and spend their money in that town. It's all about idolatry, and it all boils down to greed and merchandising.
Yeah, yeah. I can remember when I was a kid, somebody claimed they had gone to Rome and gotten some splinter of some saint's bone, and they had it in a venerated place in their home. I thought, wow, you people are really crazy. Even as a kid, it didn't seem, you know, I thought, whoa.
Right. Well, that whole dumb mercy seat thing, it would just be another relic. You're right. That's all it would be.
Well, yeah, they all kind of accomplish the same purpose, whether it's in the religious world or the secular world. They're still manipulating the same nonsense in people and you know, milking them.
Well, absolutely. It's like every American town that wants to be the peanut capital of the world, the pumpkin capital of the world, And this town I live in here, they got this big antique car museum with 200 antique cars in it. That's the whole town revolves around that stupid museum.
Yeah, yeah. It's a business, you know.
Yeah, it's a business.
Well,
and all they're trying to do is suck in money from outside of the town.
Well, that's true, but can you say that about museums like the Museum of Natural History?
Excuse me, John?
Can you say that about the Museum of Natural History, though?
Can I say that about the Museum of Natural History? In a way, I can, because it's used to attract tourism dollars and not to teach students. If it was used to teach students, then it would probably be something good, but it's not used for that purpose.
Well, yeah, I can see that. It does have, I think they were adding, last time I was there, they were adding in an evolution
Well, there you have it. But, yeah right. But it's not, you know, it might interest students in science, but you know, and don't get me wrong, I've been there. I've been there with four or five of my kids at a time and spent $200 in one day in that place. Yes, the Museum of Natural History in New York City, right across the street from Central Park, Central Park West. Now, right now, and I've been in the Hayden Planetarium a few times, and I thought it was the greatest thing in the world when I was a kid. But it's used to attract, to generate revenue. It's not used to teach kids science. If it teaches kids science, that's just a you know, there's good side effects to a lot of diseases.
Well, you'll find these things are also, though they're not really just in nature, in function, they really are just temples to humanism.
Well, right, by promoting evolution and things like that.
But even without evolution, it's still very human-centered, man-centered, physical world-centered, and granted, you know, there are all sorts of lost atheistic secular individuals, you know, for whom that's, you know, all they have. But that is an overall outlook, secular humanist type of an outlook that they all do promote and sustain.
Well, that's true, and we could probably have a good science center if everybody had the same true religion.
Yeah, science is great as long as you know what it is. You know, it's just like being a car mechanic. You're examining how the machine was put together by our creator and how it functions. That's great, you know.
Well, even a lot of people, even though we might have different talents on the surface, deep down, there's still this thing that we call ourselves that we don't even want to take the time to look at ourselves. And then if we don't look at ourselves and run to Yahweh, we're going to just be imagining all kinds of weird stuff, right? You know what I mean? Hello?
Well,
yeah, I'm listening, Bruce.
If we can't get beyond our stupid little selves, and we're so concerned about our talents, our gifts, if you will, you know, what I'm saying is our white, if we don't fill our white brothers and sisters all around the world in ourselves and our bones, and care about our own folk, and get beyond our own little self-centeredness, and science, those science centers are just foolishness, because they encourage self-aggrandizement and self-centeredness in a way that, the wisdom of the world is foolishness to Yahweh. We might think we know, but what do we know? Any man thinks he knows something, he doesn't really know anything. Well, what I'm saying is Yahweh knows all things. All that we need to know is all we need to know, but beyond that, we get into trouble, that's all. There sure is a lot we think we know, isn't there? Yeah. I speak for myself, though. So.
Well, I suppose we all have to get used to the concept that we can't control it all, we can't be it all, we can't know it all, and we're not even supposed to. But the world kind of gives you a whole other set of goals and agendas and tells you that you are supposed to somehow, I guess, accomplish something in their arena that means something in their terms, in their world, that is really, by the nature of it, foreign to what we are in reality.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. And, well, I went to SeaWorld, and they have this big Leviathan that's called a killer whale. It's black and white. And it says, believe. Believe in what? a beast that's white and black, you know? And they promote, I mean, our whole English language has been so, it's just a mess. And so we got to even go beyond the words we use that are so limited. I guess what I'm saying is we really have to be still and quiet
we're always chattering. Nothing wrong with having a chatter talk, but like we're a bunch of retarded parrots. Somebody else said. But the spirit of Yahweh really is doesn't get along with these non-Adamics.
Well, no, it doesn't. But it can be taught to, and I've seen that in the cities, and it's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
That there's a wigger is a horrible thing. Yeah, a mind is a horrible thing to waste, that's for sure. Yeah, you won't find one in a black skull, but there's a lot of white ones wasted by hanging out with those Negroes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, lost white people are a frightening thing. The ones who are brought into the system, who haven't escaped at all. You just back away. You don't know what to do with them or say to them anymore.
Yeah, this half Spanish, half Latino truck driver, every time I see him, he has these big earrings on his ears, and not that I care about them. I like tell him, come over here, let me rip those out of your ear. And I actually go for them. I want to rip them out. No.
Yeah, they're disgusting. People, I don't know. That they, the things people do to themselves today in the name of fashion or being with the in crowd, or I don't know, it's horrible. I don't know if I was talking about it here or to somebody on the telephone, but a few weeks ago I was at a gas station. I filled my car up, and I tried to fill it up, and it cut off at 20, and this girl came out of the office, and this beautiful young Irish-looking girl, long brown hair, big blue eyes, and explained to me that she pressed the wrong button and limited my gas pump to $20 worth of gas. So she was so pretty I couldn't get mad at her. You know, she was so cute I couldn't even say anything. I said, all right, I'll just give you the $20. And she turned around and walked away. And she had these hip hugger pants on, and she had one of those big tattoos right across her lower back. And my heart just broke. Because this girl looked, she reminded me just like my own daughter, you know. And she was a beautiful young girl. She was actually stunning. And she had this huge, she couldn't have been 18, 19 years old. And she had this huge tattoo. She was scarred for life. And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, how could such a beautiful young woman just do that to herself? I can't. And they're all over up here. They're all doing stuff like that. I can't get over it. I just can't believe it. But they're doing it, and they don't seem to care. They think it's cool. They think it's in, and yet, you know, every generation of our youth, I thought we were bad when I was a kid in the 70s. Every generation gets worse. It's true. It's our society is decaying at a remarkable rate. The girls that I was in high school with would have never thought of doing that to themselves. Never.
Tattoos? No.
Not like that.
No, no.
It, she had on one of those, one of those shirts that bare their midriffs, and
mm-hmm.
She had on these hip hugger jeans. They were riding a little low, and she was modestly dressed except for that. They're all into this bare the midriff thing, right? But most of the girls up here that bare their midriffs have their bellies hanging out 4 inches over the top of their jeans. It's disgusting. I don't want to go out in public. I don't want to leave the house. I got to see that. Well, anyway, yeah, Commander McBride calls it a tramp stamp, and that's exactly what it is. This beautiful girl, she was presentable. She didn't have any spikes to her nose or her eyes. She was a really attractive young woman, and she turned around and walked away, and I looked and I said, I can't believe that she has that. I just can't believe it. I just shook my head. I wanted to, I don't know, I would have cried if that was my kid. If I'd have known her a little better, you know, it was terrible. But they're all doing it up here, and I've seen a lot of girls up here like that, and it's crazy.
That's hard. Imagine people who have children who are trying to keep them away from all that. I mean, the saturation level is so total at this point. I mean, in schools, on television, on the internet, magazines, wherever. all of this stuff is presented as, hey, it's cool. I mean, I don't know how parents, I don't know how, they'd have to go off and live in some Amish compound. I don't know how else you'd do it.
I think, didn't tattoos come from Negroes in Africa where they would tattoo their face and the Indians?
They are mentioned in the Bible. And they are, our Scythian ancestors, the forerunners to the Germans in Asia, that they've been dug out of the ground, blonde Scythians with all of the accoutrements, the burial accoutrements that the Greeks described the Scythians as having. There's no doubt these people aren't Scythians. And some of them are tattooed from head to toe.
Huh.
Where the skin has been preserved. And there are many where the skin has been preserved in those very dry, arid, high elevation climates, like the Tarim mummies. But a lot of them are replete with tattoos.
Well, isn't it pretty common amongst tribal groups? I mean, you find it in those islanders. They have done it. Asians have done it.
But I'm sure it was spread by the same people in ancient times to all those different places, I would bet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would bet the same Kenite bastards taught us how to do that. That's my guess. I mean, I can't prove it, but
yeah.
That's why the Romans called the Picts Picts.
Well, it must not have started with our people because Yahweh does mention in His Word not to mark your body, so it's not something that He approves of.
Well, Pict was the Roman word for the people not for the Scots. But for the not for the Scotty who came from Ireland, but for the Picts who were traced back to Scythia and inhabited Scotland, parts of what we know today as Scotland, that the Romans called them Picts after the Latin word Pictus, which means painted, because they tattooed their skin and they painted their skin and went into battle naked. That's why they were called Picts.
Now that's becoming popular. Tattooing, like, all over.
I wonder if we got the word picture from that.
Well, we got the word picture from the same Latin word that the word Pict came from, yes. And I actually had a joke about that once the two Scots were chasing a Pict and he went off a cliff and he fell and that there were a couple of Normans at the bottom of the cliff spreading their sails on the beach to dry, and the Pict landed in the middle of the sail and the two Scots looked over the top of the cliff and they said, "Look, a picture." Nah, that was a bad joke. Okay, I must be getting bored. I'm sorry.
Well, that's a good thing. Being bored.
No, it's never a good thing being bored. I'm really rarely bored. So what else do we have tonight? I mean, this has to go somewhere besides there. We've only been at this for an hour. Come on.
Well, you take the things you hate and you embrace them and you go be it, you end it. That's all I'm saying.
John, do you have any other questions I can't answer straight? I'm kidding.
Hey, John.
I guess not. He gave up on me. He probably just walked away from the phone.
Yeah, 2012 is probably going to come and go, and all these 2012ers are going to be scratching their heads.
Well, I used to joke with guys. I spent 25 years of my life in jail and prison. My little brother, he's in the Navy. He's a career man in the Navy. He's been in the Navy 28 years, and neither of us have tattoos. But I got two sisters, and they both got tattoos. That's just incredible.
No.
Okay, I won't talk about tattoos anymore. Somebody say something.
Well, tattoos like taboo. Sounds like taboo.
Yeah, but I don't think the words are connected. I don't know where that taboo word came. I think that word was brought in from the Bengalis by the English soldiers. That's where I think the word taboo came in. But we have a few words like that.
Oh.
That came from India. That came from India through the English.
Oh.
The English from India and the East through the British Army.
Taboo is like a curse, huh?
I think taboo is one of them. I mean, I could be wrong, but.
I think the worst word anybody could say is the people of Yahweh's curse that he named. I think that's the dirtiest word ever made. Is Jew.
Is Jew? Well, you know, Judah was told. The inhabitants of Jerusalem were told that their name would be for a curse. And it was for a curse. It is for a curse. It's been for a curse ever since. And I don't know why Christians can't read that and look at the Jews and think, curse, because that's what they are.
Well, it's a taboo to embrace them.
Yes, it is. And that's they love mistranslating and taking advantage of some of the obscure language of Scripture. But Paul said, if anybody does not love the Lord Jesus Christ, let him be accursed. He must be accursed. A rebel to be destroyed. That's the correct reading of 1 Chronicles 16:21, I think.
Amen. The goodness and severity.
Oh, taboo is Tongan. It's from Tonga, that word. So I'm sure it came through the British Empire.
Hmm.
But not from India. Close, no cigar.
Yeah, it has the word abo in it. Yeah, a Latin word too.
No, it doesn't have any Latin words in it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you can play around with words. And, yeah. But anybody that somebody mentioned, that Glenn Keeney, that fellow's a straight-out freak.
Leia has a question. I don't know what the question is, though. She left. No, she's back. It's hard to read the dictionary in the chat room at the same time. I have to scroll. Greg Howard's here. How you doing, Greg? Is there a verse I can give my dad to prove that Jesus was not a Jew? Well, how about John 7:1? He wouldn't walk in Jewry because the Jews wanted to kill him. I mean, if you're looking for one verse, it's the real hard part is to understand what a Jew is. The correct way is to learn what a Jew is. That the Jews are not Judah.
Probably the good and the bad figs and the good figs also.
I can't do it in a verse, Leia, but not properly. But there's a paper on my site that's really short. That's called A Concise Explanation of the Origin of the Jews. And that's the shortest thing that I have. I mean, other men better than me might be able to write something better. But I mean, as far as making the citations necessary and the explanation necessary to make it right, that's the best I could do. I'll have a link for you in a second.
Jewry absolutely was not the ways of Yahshua at all. Yeah.
My cut and paste is not working across machines for some reason, and it should be. I'm going to have to type it. There you go, Wendy. That's the shortest thing I got. It's 6 short paragraphs. Okay, don't everybody talk at once. Maybe Greg will talk in. Maybe I get Clifton to call in. I'm putting Clifton on the spot again. Poor Clifton.
Hi, Clifton. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, Wendy, I wish I could do better, but that's the shortest thing I got. There's some facts that need to be understood to understand who the Jews are. And that's why Christ is not a Jew, because the Jews are not Judah.
But the Judeos are so used to, you know, a one verse wonder hit, you know, and it's like the sound bite, you know. Yeah, when you pull out a verse and it tells you everything.
Well, right.
That's what they're used to.
Well, right. So you go to where it says for fear of the Jews in the scripture. If you really, and that should raise a question right there. Or how about Genesis? I'm sorry.
Oh, there's a problem. He's a Hagee addict.
John 10:26. You don't believe me because you're not my sheep. He didn't say you're not my sheep because you don't believe me. That's what Hagee would try to convince you. He said, you don't believe me because you're not my sheep. Now, what better verse is there than that?
And you get it straight out of the mouth of a Jew, too.
Greg needs unmuting.
Because
but you
that
do
might...
not believe me because you are not my sheep. John 10:26.
They'll even say they're not sheep.
Now, the mainstream church teaches that they're not a sheep because they don't believe them. But that's not what he said. He said, you don't believe me because you're not my sheep. So that's the best verse, Wendy, that I could think of, if you need only one verse. But that should make him read my paper. I mean, explain that to him. Challenge him on that and tell him to read that paper. Because you need more facts than just that one verse. Well, we're right, John from AL. It does. Every time you see the word Jew in the Bible, it should say Judah or Judahite in the Old Testament. Or it should say Judah or Judea in the New Testament. It should never say Jew anywhere. In the New Testament, it should be Judeans, which was just a race-mixed political entity drawn up by the Romans, of which the old kingdom of Judah, geographically, was only a small part. And had very few of the people of Judah in it.
Hey, Bill, Greg here. How you doing?
Hello, Greg. It's great to hear from you. Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Are we the only group of Christians in the whole world that understand who the Jews really are? I really think we are.
Well, I mean, I like to think the 2-seed line is just a little bigger than our little circle, but yeah,
I like
numbers,
to think so too.
The numbers are few, that's for sure.
I mean, the more that I see of who these creatures really are, and I don't even call them people anymore. They are not people. They have mastered the art of the chameleon. That they look like us, they act like us, they talk like us, they marry our women. You know, but they are not humans in the sense that we are humans of the line of Adam. And I try to look around for what other groups think of the Jews, and 99.9% of all the other Christian groups still have the mistaken concept that these people are the Old Testament believers. You know, that the seed line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And to understand who they really are opens up so much truth. It really is one of the main keys to unlock the whole Bible and every book. If you understand who these Edomite Jews are, and then you look around you, you forget the Bible for a minute, just look around you at how they've seemingly occupied all the judgeships, all the, you know, presidents of universities, and how they're just have infiltrated our government and the Jewish advisors in the White House that go back through various administrations. I mean, we are infested with these things, yet no one can really give a definition of who they are. It's really quite profound to understand who is the Jew. You know, and I would guess even many in Christian Identity, if you pin them down and said, define a Jew, what is a Jew? Yeah, they might hesitate a little bit. You know, it's a complicated subject, and it merits much study to understand who they are, because, I mean, they've targeted us for destruction, so I don't know about everyone else, but if someone targets me for destruction, I want to understand who they are, where they come from. You know, I want to know as much about them as I can, because they've got me in their sights, so I want to know who they are. So it's a subject I never tire of studying or discussing with folks that are in the know. And praise Yahweh, there's nobody else in the know besides the true Christian Identity believers, as far as I can tell.
Well, right. You know, the Jews, that's a good point. The Jews hate us and want to prey on us whether we know who they are or not.
Absolutely. In fact, they go out of way to make sure we don't know. They keep us off balance constantly.
We may as well just tell the truth. I mean, I became a prey for the Jews in my life, believe me. And I may as well just tell the truth, and it don't matter, because they're going to hate me anyway.
Yeah. Whether you're a Christian Zio freak that prays for the peace of Jerusalem and dances in the aisles to the silly Jewish songs that you can find those videos around on YouTube, or you're on the other end like we are, that understand these creatures are truly a progeny of fallen angels, they hate us all anyway. So.
And so, you know, sometimes Greg and Bill, this is Bruce. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi. I think we say that the Judeo-Christians are deceived by the Jew, by the devil. But, you know, I'm curious to, maybe that's not entirely true. Maybe they would like to just justify their way of loving their sin and their error of living. And when they embrace that, they're actually in with bed with them and doing, you know, acting like a Jew, right? So it's not like, I don't know if it's totally deception. I think they're actually embracing that. You know what I mean?
Well, most of them really think they're doing well, that they're doing right, because that's what they're taught, and they believe it. They don't. Their failure is to investigate for themselves. Their failure is to read the Bible that they have for themselves. If you read, I can't imagine. I mean, the first time I read the Bible cover to cover, I was pretty I was pretty surprised at some of the things in it that I had never read, and comparing those things to the religious training I had through all 10 years of Catholic school that I went to, and I have a pretty good memory, and I couldn't believe that some of the things the Catholic Church taught in light of Scripture. And all you have to do is read the Bible, and it'll make you wonder about the Church, about organized religion.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And the fault of these people is that they don't read the Scriptures. I mean, if you're teaching me something out of a book, I want to see that book. Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, that's a natural inclination. I don't care if it's computer science or religion or history or what. If you're teaching me something out of an electrical engineering book, I want to see the book. Why should you be the only one to have it? And that's where Christians fail. They don't want to see the book. They want to be told everything's okay and they're going to be well. They're like little babies. They're a bunch of we have 250 million grown-up little babies in this country.
Well, you know, Bill, the Jew has dumbed us down via the education system, television, the media, movies, Hollywood, on and on and on, to the point where the vast majority of our people can't even think anymore in any kind of a theological way. You know, they're used to being spoon-fed now by whoever their pastor is. And, you know, they can spout off a few bullet points of doctrine. But if you challenge that in any way, they're clueless. and they're offended, and they think, well, that's not what I've been taught. So you're some kind of heretic or cult, you know, or whatever.
Right. In reality, we are the anti-cult.
Well, we are the true studiers and the theologians and the scholars of the Bible. Because, you know, I challenge anyone, disprove what we believe in Christian identity. Open your Bible and prove to me that the Jew is not the progeny of the devil himself. And that prove to me that the white race is not the true elect of Yahweh and the ancient 12 tribes of Israel. Because I can show you that it is. And, you know, the vast majority of Zio-Christians, when challenged to back up what they believe, they're clueless and they cannot do it. And I appreciate this level of scholarship that we have in Christian identity. You know, I mean, these are the most important concepts and truths in the entire world.
Well,
you know,
all right, but
just,
people,
go
sorry,
ahead.
Greg, people don't like getting taken out of that comfort zone.
I
have a whole bunch of cousins here in upstate New York, and I had the first time I saw them, because, you know, I was away for a long time, right? I had a very long conversation with two of them in a third cousin's home, and she still talks to me, but they really don't talk to me anymore. one of them was a son-in-law he's my third cousin's husband.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother's my second cousin, or my first cousin once removed, or however you want to say it, right? Well, her mother's husband, who's my second cousin, I'll call her. Her husband is the one, and he was a scoffer at everything I was saying. And his son-in-law, who's my cousin Amy's husband, he was very open and wanted to hear everything I had to say. He didn't necessarily believe it, but he wanted to hear it and discuss it. While his father-in-law stood there and accused me of denying the Bible when I was quoting the Bible, right? So I guess he doesn't know what it says. Well, they're Baptists, is the bottom line. And because they couldn't accept what I've said, that what they've done is they've basically just isolated themselves from me.
You know,
they can't disprove what I say. They couldn't challenge me that day except to call me a Bible denier. And you know, the old man did that, but my cousin Amy's husband didn't. But they couldn't challenge me, but they isolated themselves from me because I make them uncomfortable because I believe differently, and just for that reason, I make them uncomfortable and they can't go there with me anymore.
Well, not even just a matter of making them uncomfortable, but the vast majority of our race is following a false religion. I mean, Paul spoke so clearly in 1 Timothy chapter 4. That in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils or demons.
Well, absolutely.
And it's
we
so
see that.
Easy to see that. You know, I mean, I don't want to be arrogant and say that we have the truth, but we have the truth. We see who we are and who our race is in this world, and we see the vast majority of our brethren following multicultural nonsense and worldwide missionary nonsense, and it's doctrines of demons, it's doctrines of fallen angels, and they're following seducing spirits. And we are incredibly, profoundly, Yahweh has shown us mercy to call us out of that and show us these truths in Christian identity. I never get tired of just thanking him that he pulled me out of Judeo-Christianity and opened my eyes to the truth.
And don't you think with people like that, the problem is, like you say, they pull away from you and they're uncomfortable around you because something inside of them knows, and they're afraid of you. And
well, right, I believe so.
And the problem is they don't have that love or desire for the truth. If they did, if they really thought they had the truth, they'd argue the point with you endlessly to prove you wrong. Or they would argue with you out of curiosity and then perhaps come to agree with you over time if they thought that you were right.
Right.
Yeah.
But they shun you because something says, This is going to require too much. This is going to hurt my comfort
zone.
Well,
it's definitely out of their own fear is absolutely what it is.
Yeah. So it's easier to call you a heretic and say, you who study the Bible do not understand the Bible. You're a Bible denier because you don't look at it the way my guy tells me to look at it.
No doubt.
Yeah.
And he has a degree in a fancy robe, you know.
And then he tells me what I want to hear. He doesn't tell me truth.
They quickly retreat to labels, you know. Oh, you're just a racist. You're a Nazi. You're a KKK.
Well, now I just tell them I'm a racist. When I ask you, what are you doing? Oh, I'm a professional racist.
It's funny, Bill, that you say that because I almost do the exact same thing. I'm proud when someone refers to me in that way. And I go, you know, you're right. I love my race because other races are allowed to love their race, yet we're not. And that alone really points to the fact that we have the truth. Why would one particular race be so singled out that they can never meet together as a race or be proud of their race or assemble as a race or celebrate the fact of their heritage while every other race is encouraged to do so? Is that not a pointer that we have found something that our race truly is a unique race on this planet?
Absolutely.
It's an absolute pointer. And not only are we a unique race, I mean, we are the one unique race that carries the bloodline of Yahweh himself. And that's the greatest profound thing that I've ever seen, that Yahweh's race is on this earth, surrounded by bizarre, pseudo-walking zombie, twice-dead other creatures walking around amongst us. It still freaks me out when I walk around and see all these other races around me, and I think, surely this is not meant to be, you know.
My own study and observations of history and historical inquiries and observations of society prove to me every day that what I believe is true is true. My religion's proven to me every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and I'm not trying to prove my religion. It's proven to me. And it's that makes me highly comfortable that I'm I may not be perfect, but I'm just about there.
Bill, I think you're a racist. And I mean that in a good way.
Because racism is love for the original creation of God.
Well, there's
anti-racism is hatred for God's creation.
I mean, there's one race on this earth that carries the DNA of Yahweh. And there's one race on this earth that he breathed his spirit breath into, and no other race. And, you know, the more you see it clearly, the more you understand. And it's just like you've said many times, and I buy into it, you know, every plant that my Heavenly Father has not planted shall be rooted up. I mean, it's just too clear.
That leaves just one race.
Yahweh breathed his race into one DNA seed line. That was the Adamic race. That's us and no one else. I mean, forget all the other ambiguities in the Bible. That seems to be quite clear.
Well, it's obviously that verse you quoted, Greg, what was that? In the latter days, they shall follow doctrines of devils.
Yeah, that's in 2 Timothy chapter 4.
Yeah, it's like the Judeo-Christians, and I used to do this, because I think most of us used to be, I don't know about, I can't speak for y'all, but I used to be a Judeo-Christian, and I was stigmatized by that word that Yahweh cursed, and I think they're stigmatized by a stupid little word that was planted where it shouldn't be in Scripture. It's like they associate that with the Jews have totally perverted our God by calling him a Jew, and they can't pervert him, and that's another Jesus, right?
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly where it is in the Gospels. By the way, that's in 1 Timothy 4, not 2 Timothy.
Oh.
I'm looking at it now, and that's such a really perfect verse for the days that we live in. I mean, it says, now the Spirit speaks expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron. That's what we are surrounded today in Judeo-Christianity, with these type of people speaking lies and hypocrisy, and their conscience has been seared with a hot iron. In other words, they have no conscience anymore. They're going to say whatever their you know, Jewish masters tell them to say. They might even be Israelites, completely deceived, their conscience seared with a hot iron. Who else really has a conscience but an Israelite? You think these mud creatures walking around have consciences? I do not. You know?
Well, it probably means they've been seared off from that law written in our hearts, too.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
the greatest troublemakers in the world are our brethren that are just so deceived.
Well, and they bought into their rules and or non-rules and non-regulations, like abortion's okay, and, you know, we have abortionists in our church, and we're very accepting and loving of everything that comes in the door. That's their version of having a conscience and expressing themselves in righteousness. But it isn't Yahweh's, which means they have been cut off from that law, his law, and they've adopted a substitute.
Well, right. They've come to embrace all deviancy and hate those who don't.
Yeah.
They hate those who uphold the law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, occasionally we get an enlightened thought. I'm sure we do. We all do in Christian identity, to just fall down and give thanks to Yahweh that in this insane, chaotic age with chaos all around us, that Yahweh has called us out of that mess and shown us what's really going on in the world, who we are, who the Jews are, what the situation really is. And I mean, it's a constant learning process, but to have an understanding of who is Yahweh, who are the Jews, who we are, what's really going on, the falseness around us that we can see through the fog, that is the most amazing thing on this earth that we can come into. I mean, it's just too profound to be able to understand and see the situation for what it really is. And I'm not saying we see everything, but we see 1,000 times more than the average Judeo-Christian sees. They see really nothing.
It's those
really
fabulous little wow moments that you get.
Yeah, just to be able
some
to
some big ones,
that,
some small ones.
That Yahweh's, God's name is Yahweh. Do you know how few Christians know that? You want to mess with the average Christian's mind, ask him, you know, what's God's name? I ask people that. I go, what? You know, you carry a Bible, you go to church.
They'll say, Lord, you dummy. Don't you know that?
Yeah. Jehovah, you know, they'll start guessing.
Well, they're thinking about that big hoagie sandwich at Subway.
I'd
rather take the Subway.
Just to know the name of our Heavenly Father in this age of chaos is an amazing thing. To be able to call on the true name of Yahweh. I never get tired of that name.
Well, even all of... Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Even society is aware of the term, oh, you got Jude, or, oh, who Jude you? But you talk about how the Jews are Jewing their entire day and lives, then a button gets pushed, and you know it. I mean, you've encountered it in folks. But we need to push those buttons. Those are the only things that are going to wake them up. And those buttons are there for a reason. It's not, you know, antagonism.
Hard to wake up our kin. I've come to the conclusion that I cannot talk anybody into the kingdom via salesmanship.
Yes.
No. I me either. But
and I'm a good salesman. I'm very high level.
Yahweh doesn't give them those flashes. You can talk till you're blue. It's a waste of time.
Apart from Yahweh opening their eyes, they're going to see really very little. You know,
the only people that I ever talked to, and I would try the mainstream evangelical once in a while, but that almost always went down in flames. The only people I could talk to were people that were already racially conscious.
Oh, yeah, they're the only ones seemingly that have much of a, I don't know. I mean, Yahweh can open anyone's eyes, but.
I had very high degrees of success with people that were already racially conscious.
Well, I understand now why you love to go to those crazy, you know, National Socialist kind of meetings and, you know, the guy's really out on the fringe. I appreciate the fact that he has a heart to do that. Because, you know, they have some racial awareness. So it's like they're, at least their eyes are open a little bit to the fact that our race is unique on this planet. You know, I frequent a lot of, you know, various white type sites on the internet, you know, and they're not Christian identity sites. And yeah, they're always really down on, Christianity and the Bible and Jesus. And Jesus was a Jew and the Bible's a Jewish book and that whole, you know, of course they're messed up in the head. They see nothing, but at least they see our race as special. So perhaps these are the ones that are slowly being awakened. But it frustrates me to see them with such a low concept of the Bible. But I know the Jew has destroyed so many minds that it doesn't surprise me that many of our people this way. You know, our minds, many of our minds have been destroyed by Jewish indoctrination over this generation. Since they've mastered all sources of information, you know, they're such sinister bastards. I absolutely believe, in fact, this Sunday I'm doing Eli's show on the Voice of Christian Israel, and we're going to explore the concept of the doctrines of demons and the fallen angels in the latter days, and I'm absolutely convinced that they have mastered all sources of information and flow of information on this earth, and every bit of ability to indoctrinate our race from all angles. I mean, they've got us running in circles. Most people have no concept why the world is about to explode. They can sense something is wrong, but if you ask them to explain it, they have no idea. They just don't have a clue. And most of them are following doctrines of demons and seducing spirits in the latter times, just like Paul mentioned. It's easy to see if you can step out of the fray and take a look. And we're among the few that can do that because we actually know who we are in the world and we actually know who the enemy is. That's a great thing right there. If you ask your average Christian, who's the real enemy in the world? How many of them do you think would say, oh, it's the Jew? Very few. Very, very few would be able to pinpoint the Jew as the true enemy of the Christian in the world today.
Well, even the so-called enlightened people might say the Illuminati. I mean, the Alex Jones
right.
said.
Yeah, they would say, yeah, well, the Illuminati. Yeah,
but
know.
would they even bring the Jew element into it? Do they?
No,
even,
as soon as you do, you're damned.
Do
I
they
mean,
even? If it's not wearing a yarmulke, or if it isn't wearing a black coat and a hat and curls, or sitting behind a pawn shop window with a hooked nose, they don't even think of Jew. They don't know what a Jew is.
Right. And the Jew has mastered that cloud of confusion. They want us completely off balance. They don't want us to be able even to define what is a Jew. Is it a religion? Is it a race? You know, is it someone that goes to a synagogue? Is it someone that converts to Judaism? What is a Jew? They thrive on that type of chaos.
What was that product when we were kids? Is it a gum or is it a candy?
It's a Jew. it
doesn't say in John 7, verse 1, that Jesus did not walk in Illuminatiism?
You know, I've come to the conclusion that you can just boil a Jew down to DNA. Forget everything else. A Jew is someone that carries the DNA of the fallen angel that mated with Eve and produced Cain. And that DNA, even though it can be watered down through race mixing, if that DNA exists, that person is a Jew. And I really firmly believe, and Bertrand Comparé came up with this at first, and probably other people came up with it, but I totally agree with him that the mark of Cain is the hook nose on the face of a Jew. And you can be, it's fascinating to study the pictures of Jews And even if they get their nose fixed via plastic surgery early on, that hook comes back later in life, and it's really incredible to observe it. That's why I love Googling different pictures of people. And you can zoom in and you can see the mark of Cain smack right in the middle of their face. And we are surrounded and controlled, and there's tons of Jews that really run this world. And you can take a look, and they all have that hook nose, some to more or less extent. But you can see the hook. You can't hide that hook. It's there. And even if they get it surgically fixed, it comes back later in life. I know Yahweh does that. I'm sure of it. That's the mark. That's the mark of Cain.
Unread message.
And I'm, this is my opinion, but I'm guessing the original mark of Cain, the giant hook nose, unmistakable.
Well yeah, but the only, you know, Cain was given that mark so that nobody would kill him.
And
I mean, if I was out in the woods and I saw a guy with that giant hook nose and nobody was around, I don't know if that mark had worked too well.
Well, I don't know if it worked for me either. But I think there was an identifying mark that could not be missed. And every Jew seems to have the hook. So just logically, I conclude the hook nose is the mark of Cain. And it still exists today. They can't get rid of the hook. You know, even though they've race mixed through millennia, if there's Jew DNA on board, the hook will manifest itself. And again, it's only my opinion. I can't go to the Bible and prove it. But I'm convinced that that hook nose is the mark of Cain.
Well, it's been an observation ever since I was a little kid. I remember hearing it that every Jewish girl in New York and New Jersey for her 16th birthday gets a nose job.
Yeah, and there's something to that. They want to get rid of the hook. But interestingly enough, the hook comes back later in life. Even if you surgically fix the nose, the hook returns as they age.
Well, they're just as scary looking in other ways by the time they hit 30. I mean, and usually a lot sooner than that.
I mean, these creatures are marked by Yahweh with the mark that even if they surgically get it taken away, it comes back.
Another thing, they have their eyes kind of hide under their upper eyelids a lot.
Oh yeah, they have numerous distinguishing characteristics: a sloped forehead. Generally close-set eyes, the hook nose, of course.
Goofy-looking chin and mouth.
I mean, if once you're enlightened as to who the Jew is, you can spot them. If you're an observant person, you can spot them most of the time. I believe that's one reason they love to intermarry with our kind, because they get to pass along their genetics, their Cainite DNA gets continued on, but they minimize the external view of it. I think there's nothing a Jew loves more than to marry an Aryan white girl, blonde, blue-eyed white girl, and mix their evil DNA with that. Because they know their DNA gets passed on, but the outward characteristic gets minimized. And they love that because they can blend in even more. They're truly the reptilians among us. You know?
What is it, Bill? About 15 to 20 million probably are in this country alone.
15 to 20, I think it's probably more like 45 million.
Oh. Well, yeah, with all the Latrinos.
Maybe 20%.
Well,
and probably 90% of those would claim to be Holocaust survivors. I'm telling you. Those old Jews, man, none of them miss a beat. They're all Holocaust survivors. It freaks me out to hear that stuff, you know. They'll play that card. They'll be playing that card forever until Yahweh casts every one of them into the fire, and then that'll be the end of that nonsense.
It's amazing how time progresses, and there are more Holocaust.
I know. It is unbelievable. You know, the other day I did a quick study online of how many Holocaust museums there are in the United States, and I came up with there are 25. Holocaust museums in the United States.
And there's never been a Holocaust in the United States.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
25 Holocaust museums in the United States. And you know how many museums were dedicated to the true Holocaust, the annihilation of, you can't even put a number on it. somewhere between 20 and 50 million of our people in the Bolshevik Revolution and the slaughter of the white Christians in the Ukraine and Eastern Europe. You know how many museums in the U.S. are dedicated to that? None.
How about the 30 years war?
Yeah, not a single one.
Let's build one.
Yet school after school after school does field trips to the various Holocaust museums.
Yeah, well, it's all about indoctrination, isn't it?
For young Goyim indoctrination sessions.
Yes. Worship the Jew's old shoes. Worship the soap made from Jews. Worship the lampshades made from Jews.
And how about the different colored smoke that came out of the smokestacks based on the location of various Jews?
More based on whether it was Jews or Poles, right?
The smoke was different colors.
Don't forget female hair for mattresses.
Yes.
One's amazing. The stories are incredible.
Oh, I know, but people believe them. That's what's more incredible. It's better than Hollywood, and people believe them. Yeah. Well, people believe Hollywood, too, so.
Well, Hollywood is their absolute propaganda arm to perpetuate these myths via movies, Schindler's List, and on and on and on and on and on, you know, ad nauseum movies perpetuating these myths. And you know, they're expertly done. It's hard to grasp how much these creatures are master manipulators of human thought and emotion. Yes. They've had millennia to master the art of infiltration and manipulation. I mean, I don't know. I could go on and on. I mean, these creatures are masters of manipulating human thought.
Well, you know, the manipulation, Greg, they did with Hiroshima, that was a Manhattan project headed by Jews with Roosevelt, and more people died in Dresden than both of those bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and nobody knows that. I mean, not very few people. Amazing, that deception there. And then it was the whites that did it, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're almost living in a true matrix world, you know, currently, with the amount of information available and who's in charge of the sources of information. You can trust very little of what you hear and read in the media. It's all a giant, mind game. Sometimes I'll only watch news anymore just to increase my aptitude of the flow of information and how false it is, you know.
That's for 20 seconds at a time, hopefully.
Yeah, I can't take much of it.
Yeah, I know.
Because I look at the hook nose of the person, or it's a Negro reading the news to me, and I just think, you know, you never would have this job if some Jew media director didn't hire you. You know.
Well, check this out. Not to change the subject, but I'm hosting this program. And, mm-hmm. and what are you supposed to do when you're hosting a program? You're supposed to talk, right? You're really not supposed to have activity on your browser. I mean, it shouldn't be required. Well, my screen froze up, and I go to the I close the screen, and I go to the browser window where the TalkShoe program is, and it says, sorry, your session is timed out due to inactivity. For security reasons, the previous action you were attempting did not complete.
That happens to me frequently. That's why during TalkShoe, I not only put some kind of entry in the chat, like a period, I go over and I refresh my TalkShoe page.
Well,
or it thinks I timed out for doing nothing.
Well, right, but I mean, I have been running my mouth, and it should realize that, no.
Hey, question, Bill. I've noticed
it should realize that I'm on the call. It should realize that.
I've noticed you can't surf any other websites during a TalkShoe thing. You know, it punishes you if you say, you know, minimize your chat room and go to another website to just check on something.
But you know, I have three computers and three browsers running, and I don't usually. I'm having a weird problem with my cut and paste today. Between my main computer and my Linux computer. I open the TalkShoe screen on my Linux computer, and it's dedicated to that usually. And my main computer, I can run one computer, two computers from one keyboard. And that's how I do it. And usually I could copy and paste stuff across that bridge, but for some reason it's not working today to copy and paste. It's strange. I don't know why. But TalkShoe doesn't like me anymore. I have to sign out and sign back in.
Well, I'm convinced that all these TI shows are monitored and probably messed with by, you know, various moles that no doubt
monitoring this program. I don't care what they hear. I mean, we don't speak anything but the truth. We don't advocate sinister plots to
right.
Upset.
Yeah, we never advocate violence, and we don't need to.
No, we don't need to.
I mean, we know what's coming up eventually via Yahweh and his final judgment, and we're more than satisfied to let that play out. And whatever happens in the meantime, we accept it. You know, we know it has to happen. So, but I still think they keep an eye on us as domestic extremists.
Well, of course, Christians are Nazis. Didn't you know that? I mean, listen to some of the videos on YouTube from Tel Aviv. I got a couple of them on my site. It's the general attitude of the Jew. Is that if you're a Christian, you're a Nazi.
Yeah. And so many of the Christians are supporting Israel.
Well, the dumbass Christians don't realize what the Jews think about them because they don't watch those YouTube videos.
They totally play them for pasties. It's amazing.
The Christians are in the porno. They're in Blockbuster renting Jewish pornography. So
yeah.
They'll never see those YouTube videos.
Yeah, isn't there a law for even having a New Testament in Israel?
Oh, 5 years in prison for evangelizing Christianity in Palestine, in Israeli.
Yeah, the only way I'd want to go there is if I had living fire coming out of my mouth, frying everyone to a crispy potato.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is if any Christian tries to convert a Jew after Yahshua Christ himself couldn't do it, he deserves 5 years.
That's
he deserves
great.
5 years.
Well, he didn't try to do it.
It's so true. Yahshua couldn't do it. Who are we to go over and try to turn
exactly.
those into sheep?
He did nothing but curse them.
He didn't try to convert them.
Right, he didn't try to convert them.
And probably the only reason Judas got invited in was because it was just part of the providential plan and it had to be.
But basically, you know, the story about the parable of Lazarus and his five brothers and Lazarus, and he was basically told they have Moses and the prophets. If they'd have believed them, they'd believe me.
Yeah.
And that's what our attitude should be with the Jews. Get lost. Beat it.
It's a total waste to try to convert anyone other than a true white racial Aryan.
Well, right. And we're told specifically, explicitly, to have nothing at all to do with them in Scripture.
Yep.
I think a lot of our kinfolk just can't, all they want to do is grasp onto the goodness, but they just absolutely ignore the severity of our Father, you know, that it's only for...
Well, right, they do, but they're taught, they're trained. That's that Old Testament God. He's mean.
Feminism.
Jesus is different. Jesus is old. Jesus loves everybody. That's what they're taught. That Old Testament God is mean.
Where did the Old Testament guy go? He go away somewhere?
Well, they discard the entire Old Testament. They've dispensed of it. That's why they're dispensational.
Well, I know, but what do they say happened to him? You know? I'm just asking because, you know, I wandered around and avoided all that muddle for years only because not that I knew what was going on, but I knew they were wallowing in total confusion.
Well, they basically, they're taught that the Old Testament is a book of fables, that it doesn't matter. None of it matters.
Mm-hmm.
Only the New Testament matters. That's all they need.
Yeah.
Yep. The rabbis of old came up with that brilliant concept for them, brilliant, to confuse all of us that Jesus died for every single person on the face of the earth, every race.
World.
It was really a stroke of genius on their part, if you think about it. Look at the confusion that has brought into the Christian world. to Christianity in general, thinking that, you know, it's like it was the epitome of the initial concept of multiculturalism. The white race isn't special. Jesus died for every single person that's on the earth, the blacks, the Mexicans, the Chinese, the Koreans. Whites are just one other race and that whole mix. Jesus died for everybody. That was a stroke of genius. I'm convinced that was a doctrine of a demon, a fallen angel, a hybrid creature thought up that idea, and it was interjected into us. And immediately our race was greatly watered down with the thought that of that universalistic belief that Jesus died for everybody, and the white race is no special race. Well, it's really a stroke of satanic genius, you know, and the fact that Christian identity sees through that foolishness. And no wonder we're branded as racist. I hate those labels, yet when I'm called that, I view it as a badge of honor because it means that we see who we are in this world. We're the elect, and no one else is the elect but our race. And that's not some bizarre KKK, weirdo, racist, you know, redneck concept. That's the truth of the Bible. And it's not hard to prove. Not hard to prove at all.
Fact, again, if they want to call us Nazis, let's be Nazis.
Yeah, call me what. You know, if I couldn't open the word and prove it to myself, I would be very insecure. But it's so clear. Once you see it and you can accept it, and then all the verses fit into the puzzle makes sense. All the pieces fit. And you realize Yahweh did not come to this earth, become a man, and die to save all the Negroes in Africa and all the Mexicans and all these other mud races that in, you know, infest the earth. He didn't come here for them. There's no chance whatsoever that he came here for them. You know? He came here with one race of people on this earth, and that's easily proven from the Word, and especially from some of the apocryphal books, Enoch in particular, that was kept out of the Bible because those books made it crystal clear who he came for. He came for one seed line of people, the seed line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the 12 tribes, and no one else. In fact, those other tribes those other people are scarcely even mentioned ever. They're so insignificant. They almost have zero importance. They're never mentioned.
Yeah, the Jew wants to make it look like Yahshua kind of changed his mind after he said he only came for the 12 lost tribes, right? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This one Jew called me and Mike Delaney were talking on a talk show, and this rabbi, or no, this Jew called in and said he had a rabbi brother who was one of the highest rabbis that was going around from churches to churches trying to tell everybody to stop the violence, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, the only violence is a rabbi there, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Hey, so what is it you say if you see a rabbi, a crime has already taken place?
Right, if you've seen a rabbi, you've already seen a crime. He's a one-man walking crime syndicate.
That's a great line.
Crime just emanates from rabbis.
Yeah, he's on his way from one crime scene to another, like Bill says.
So someday we're going to find the bones of millions of missing children in the basements and alleys of synagogues.
Man, that freaks me out to hear you say that, but I don't doubt the truthfulness. Yeah.
Hey, Greg?
Yes.
Hi, this is David. How you doing?
Hey, David.
Can we back up to Enoch just for a minute? I was reading. I found a website online. It's got all the books there.
Mm-hmm.
And where it goes into the celestial? Let me click on that. Where it goes into the days and the weeks and the movements of the sun and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they were talking about that earlier. I think a gal named Pilgrim was saying it's what does it mean and all that. It sounds to me like like it's laying out the mechanics of the motions of the planets.
Oh, absolutely. Enoch was shown all of that, the whole...
Yeah, I know.
The working of the universe.
Figure it out, what it means to interpret it is what I'm getting at. So somebody would want to know, what does that mean? I think what you would have to do you agree or not, or is there something else that could be done? You lay it out, make drawings, and make the motions and put them where there's, according to the instructions that he's written out there, recited. Like following a plan. When they try to what? To rebuild the ark and so forth from the dimensions given in the Bible. You got to start someplace, find out what a cubit is, and go from there, I guess, and then make it accordingly. Has that ever been done from Enoch?
Not that I know of. I mean, Enoch was shown the whole way the universe works and the true calendar.
Right.
You know, not the calendar that we really follow now, which is probably one more Jewish subversion to throw off.
364 days in the year, and what do we got? 365 and a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so I wonder if we're still. And the thought crossed my mind. I can't remember. There's some reason they added that extra time on there, but should we still be on 364 days then? Is there some mess up there doing?
You know, I don't have great understanding of the whole calendar situation. It's kind of an ongoing study, but I mean, the calendar system that we're on now is probably of Jewish origin, and it's not accurate in some ways. I don't know exactly how. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's a calendar I've been involved with my whole life, so I'm just using.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little worried. My calendar comes to an end on December 31st this year. Does that mean that's it? Or do we have, what about the Mayans? They get to live another couple of years then, I guess. This doesn't end until 2012.
Did you ever see the cartoon I had on my site? I think it's in the gallery section on Christogenia.
It was a good one.
It's a cartoon about a Mayan writing his calendar and running out of ink, right?
Something along the line of Yahweh sharing with aliens the true end of the world.
Eli didn't really appreciate it, but I sent that cartoon to him once.
I thought they had some good art. What was that argument you put up on that mercy seat discussion? That it doesn't make any difference, right?
No, it doesn't make any difference, but it's when. The only thing we have about this whole thing is one man's testimony, one
mm-hmm.
man's assertions that something happened, that he saw something and something happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not one shred of documented evidence. And people believe it because it's a nice story and they want to believe it. Well, I could make up a lot of nice stories, but what would that make me but a liar?
Yeah, that's true. I just want to hear what they have to say. I don't yay or nay it one way or the other.
Well, I mean, Eli had Jonathan Gray on yesterday afternoon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen Jonathan Gray's website. I'm not going to disparage him, but it looks like there's a whole lot of stuff for sale there.
Well, and there's no facts until you buy something and hope
right.
to find some facts.
As far as I'm
concerned, he's a huckster, and I am going to disparage him. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I don't know it for sure, but it looks that's what my first leanings are in thinking about. I'm not going to buy anything from there. But, several weeks ago when he was on, I thought, boy, this sounds pretty good. Let me jump over there and take a look at that website. And I scrolled and scrolled and scrolled and looked and didn't find anything except, and I click here and you get more information for, you know, send in for this CD or whatever, books and so forth. Yeah, it's...
Sounds like a Jew.
Yeah, it's a very... It's a powerful presentation that was given on the program. you know, in the attempt to be to convince the minds of people to go along with it. But I'm still not so sure. What was the other thing you mentioned that there's nothing written in there that has to, the atonement and the sacrifice, there are different occurrences where blood was put on the mercy seat, different times.
Well, right. They're insisting, and Kent had brought that up. He's not here right now, but Seven of Nani is in the forum. He had brought that up earlier in this program. He asked about this this blood on the mercy seat, and Clifton made an excellent observation with me when we were discussing this on the telephone earlier this week. Late last week, I guess, or middle of last week. Why does the blood have to be on the mercy seat? The mercy seat has to do with the Day of Atonement. The blood has to do with the Day of the Passover and the sacrifice, the Lamb of God slain on behalf of the children of Israel. The sacrifice and the atonement are two totally different things. The sacrifice and the forgiveness are not connected to the idea of atonement.
Yeah, but when Christ was crucified, that was the sacrifice, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so wouldn't that call, like when they sacrificed, they put blood on the mercy seat? Or is that not the case, or am I off track?
Well, the mercy seat is related to the Day of Atonement. It's not real. Blood did go on the mercy seat one day a year, the Day of Atonement.
Oh, but not during the sacrifice. They put blood on the altar then, was it?
Not Passover. It has nothing to do with the Passover.
But the
altar is not the mercy seat. I mean, there's no religious necessity for this belief. There's no religious necessity for this belief. And even if there was, it doesn't prove that mercy seat is under this hill in Jerusalem, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit.
It's absolutely far out.
Remote
is what it is.
Reasonableness,
And I want documentary evidence of anything I'm going to espouse. I'm not from Missouri. You got to show me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to espouse a damn thing unless I see it and see the evidence and can evaluate it. And this is one man's testimony that he saw all this and blood with 24 chromosomes. That like Clifton likes to say, that would be a mongoloid 23 times.
Yeah, they never got into that discussion on Sunday that I know of. I got in kind of late, but I listened to it over.
When DNA's missing one chromosome, you got a huge problem.
How does it develop?
23, how are you a perfect Adamite? How is Christ the perfect specimen, a perfect sacrifice, if he only has 24 chromosomes and the rest of us have 46? Get out of here. I can never believe that. That's just crazy.
Yeah, the 23 from the female side would not have been joined properly with the required 23 from the male side to germinate and proceed with the creation of a new life, would it?
Well, right. And the insistence would be that, God could do anything. Well, he probably could, but that don't mean he should or that he would. It's evident to me that he doesn't break the laws, his own physical laws, and the laws of his own creation. If Christ doesn't have 46 chromosomes, then he's not of our kind. But yet, all of the scripture says that he's one of our brethren, and he took upon himself the seed of Abraham. That tells me he had 46 chromosomes like the rest of us. And anybody that thinks otherwise is actually going against the scripture. And they have to prove it.
Yeah.
Can I include something? I watched a video clip of that Wyatt character talking to some folks, and he had his lips completely wrapped around the butt of the Jews, almost crying for them.
Well, of course he did.
Who's going to listen to that? Anybody who does that.
Of course
he did. I saw him do that finding the ark, but I didn't see anything. Pardon me?
That wasn't any of us. That's some kind of recording, or somebody has something going on in the background, or something. I don't know.
That's a computer in my truck talking to me. Tells me I'm always eating the vial of being a whore and serving vice, you've violated your hours of service. It's a stupid computer thing that talks to truck drivers now.
Yeah, Big Brother's watching all the time, or more and more all the time.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Well, the whole Ron Wyatt thing stinks.
Yeah, I agree.
It stinks like the Auschwitz crematorium.
I think so. If there's no biblical evidence for it being for the mercy seat with blood on it being a boon or a necessity or proving something, then why bother with it?
Well, yes, 43. Not all science is kike science. Don't be stupid. Don't be silly. Most is good science. It's what the Jews extrapolate from so-called science that's evil. Not all science is bad science, and many of those inventions and discoveries were made by white men, not from Jews. The Jews absconded and capitalized on it, but they don't really invent anything.
Oh, Greg?
Yes.
Yeah. A comment, if you don't mind, on a word you used a little bit ago, on the word sear, that their something you quoted said they would sear their conscience. And I looked it up in my book, in dictionary. I thought you said that they don't have a conscience. But, and I thought, wow.
I was saying that their conscience seared with a hot iron, and I gave my opinion only Israelites, you know, white people, would have a conscience. I don't believe anyone else truly has any type of real conscience per se.
It would sear their conscience, right?
Yeah.
All that means is it would cause them some pain and agony when they're faced with it. When you confronted you, they can't look you in the eye, and they can't listen to what you're saying. That's searing their conscience. They know, as you said, they know the truth.
It's like, you know, our people, so many of our people are deceived, and their conscience no longer functions in a proper way, where they can tell right from wrong. I mean, most of them are preaching complete untruths and mistruths and lies to you know, the rest of our people, doing great damage to us. And it's if those people have lost their ability to have a conscience, you know, that's a good way of saying it. Their conscience seared with a hot iron. That's really quite an accurate way of speaking, to say it that way.
Is everybody familiar here with the of course, the protocols, but Henry Ford's writings, you know, in the Dearborn Independent. I think most everybody's aware that he wrote a bunch of articles.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I've been reading this book. This is a thick paperback that I bought some years ago, and I'm reading an article, one of the Dearborn Independent issue of April 30th, 1921. And it's the title of it above is Dr. Levy, a Jew, admits his people's error. And it's Dr. Oscar Levy. Bill, are you familiar with him, or any of you folks familiar
Oscar
with
Oscar Levy? No, I'm not. I'm familiar with Henry Ford. I have not read The International Jew. I've seen a lot of quotes out of it, and it's somewhere on one of the sites I host or on one of my sites. I don't know. But
I've got the book. I bought that, but this is a different one. This is a Protocols of the Learned Elders with some additional articles from the Dearborn Independent. And this Oscar Levy, the letter that he wrote to another fellow is signed by Oscar Levy, Royal Societies Club, St. James Street, London, July 1920. And it says in the opening, I don't want to read all of this, but it's really good. It says, a Jew standing Dr. Levy, well-known in English literary circles and a lover of his people, has had the honesty, get this, and the wisdom to meet the Jewish question with truth and candor. Can you believe that? His remarks are printed in this article as an example of the methods by which Jewry can be saved in the estimation of 20th century civilization. And the circumstances were these. Here's a setup for it. It's George Pitt Rivers. Is that a familiar name to anyone? Okay. Of Worcester College, Oxford, wrote a most illuminating brochure entitled The World Significance of the Russian Revolution, which is published and sold for 2 shillings by Basil Blackwell, Oxford. The book is the result of unprejudiced observation and study and agrees with the statements made in the Dearborn Independent about the personnel of Bolshevism. The manuscript was sent to Dr. Oscar Levy as a representative Jew, and Dr. Levy's letter was subsequently published as a preface to the book, the one that I just mentioned that was written by George Pitt Rivers, and that the reader may understand the tenor of Mr. Pitt Rivers' book, section 16, page 39 to 41, is herewith given in full and is followed by Dr. Levy's comments. They mention here that the italics throughout are intended to remind the reader of remarks on similar lines made in this series, that is, from the Dearborn Independent. And there's this short little article here where they go on, where this George Pitt Rivers writes his pamphlet, and some of it is extracted and written here. And then it goes on to the letter from Levy to Mr. Pitt Rivers. And I would suggest, I'm sure you don't want me to read all of this over to you now. There's only about 3 or 4 pages here, but it's very good. It's so well done. This Oscar Levy has written a most convincing, it's very powerfully written. And he comes across like he's agreeing with Pitt Rivers, and I think it's just a disinformational type thing, but from 1921. He's completely aware of everything they're doing. I think he's part of the program, and he signed off with, he's from the Royal Society's Club. I don't think that at that time, Bill, you've got more knowledge about that era probably than I do, with those people in those clubs back there in Britain in those days. Who was the prime minister that they were writing the letters back from Russia and sending them to in Britain? Who was that? The
Dutch ambassador you talking about that was
No, the prime minister of Great Britain at that time, that the letters coming from Russia were being...
Well, the letters were mostly addressed to Lord Balfour. He was not the prime minister, but he
wasn't
was...
Wasn't he the prime minister? No?
No, he was a prominent political figure and a Jew himself, but he was not...
Oh, okay. But, yeah, all right.
He had a cabinet post, but I can't recall what it was offhand.
Oh, okay, all right. But this Oscar Levy certainly was in some high circles there in Britain, a member of the Royal Society's Club. I'm not too sure what that is, but it sounds pretty elite by title. But it's an article, if you can find it and look it up and read it. It's just another one of those things. It's very convincing to see if for somebody that doesn't want to believe that the Jews are doing what they're doing. to me, this convinces, you know, I would say it convinces me, but it just drives the point home that they're doing this intentionally. He plays all the way through the thing on words that they're not guilty. He makes a good case. I'll say that. Wow, it's like listening to the thing on Sunday with the mercy seat talk from this fellow that Eli had on the program. You listen to it for a while, and if you're not really strongly inclined and focused on the truth and what's going on, you get misled. And I think a lot of people will, but I don't know if people in this group, on this forum, and that listen to you and Eli are going to be misled by that kind of shenanigans. I certainly hope not. But this is a good story. A little few pages here. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that to bring it to your attention if you're interested in looking at that. Like I said, I could read it. I could probably type it up and send you an email copy of it. But it's a good one. It's a good book and the protocols. So that's a little bit of a thought on that. And I'm reading that today and Enoch. And we're trying to put some more thoughts together.
Well, I was hoping Unica would call in. I'm trying to coax him.
Oh, yeah.
I think his phone minutes are limited or something. I don't want to waste his time, but he knows a hell of a lot more about Henry Ford than I do. The only thing I really know is that this William J. Cameron is the editor at the Dearborn Independent. He worked for Henry Ford, and he wrote some identity books. He wrote an identity book called The Covenant People, which I read early in my identity reading back in 97. And it was
Bill?
Yes.
Bill, one thing about Henry Ford, he used to put a pamphlet on his new cars that talked against a vaccination.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Okay, I never knew that. That's pretty
cool. he knew way back then. He was.
I wish I had copies of those pamphlets and those originals.
I would love it. I would. It's on the web.
You can get the you can get copies of the International Jew. That's on. I don't have a copy. I have it on, I think Uniker, I host websites for him, and I think he has a copy on his website. He actually has an annotated on a site called The Gentle Cynic. He has a copy of the annotated, his own annotated protocols that are learned out of the Zion with a lot of notes, footnotes from Henry Ford and the International Jew.
He was a smart guy. One question. You were talking earlier, and I can't get back in the chat, or I was just asking on the chat, but you said that you weren't supposed to talk to Jews or have anything to do with them.
Well, no, we shouldn't have any
communion
at all.
Do you have a verse for that?
Well, I have a paper, Should Christians Embrace the Jews? It's on Christogenia.
Okay, all right.
Should Christians Embrace the Jews? It's under Biblical Essays, about the fourth or fifth link down.
Okay.
And that's that's the best thing I have. I can't
okay.
sum up
but
anything
in one
verse.
But you don't have like a verse that says something similar like that. Is it in that paper, the verse itself?
Well, you know, John says that many antichrists are born, are already born into the world. And they who deny that Jesus is the Christ, they are the antichrist.
I can't tell you how my father, he gets red in the face talking to me about it. He gets so upset. He spent the whole day today finding verses that show that Jews are the chosen people. And I said, well, give them to me. And he goes, I'll give them to you later. And then I didn't get a chance to get them. So I'm sure tomorrow he's going to,
Well, let me read my translation of 1 John 2:18. Little children, it is the last hour. And just as you have heard that the Antichrist comes, even now many Antichrists have been born. And the King James doesn't translate that properly, but you could tell the sense from the King James. And the word Antichrist is plural, and they're walking around in John's time. And he's identifying them. And he says, from which we know that it is the last hour. They came out from us, but they were not of us. That's 1 John 2:19.
Yeah, and then
for
he
if
says,
they were from of us, they would have abided with us, but so that they would be made manifest that they are not all from of us.
He says that God is going to change them at the end.
Well, where does it say that in Scripture?
That's what he keeps telling me. No,
the tares are going to be bundled and thrown in the fire at the end.
That's what I tell him.
That's what it says.
Very frustrating.
Those who John clearly says, and let me look for the next occurrence of this word. Who is a liar, if not he denying that Yahshua or Jesus is the Christ? He is the Antichrist who denies the Father and the Son. Each denying the Son has not the Father either.
Oh, that's perfect. What's that verse?
That's 1 John 2:22. The Jews are the Antichrist. They're the ones they're the only people walking around in the first century while John wrote, denying that Jesus was the Christ. Nobody else was doing that. I mean, the Chinese weren't doing that. The Hutus and the Tutsis weren't doing that. Who was doing that? The Jews.
Just the
period.
Jews.
Well, Muniker is on the call, and maybe, David, he could help you out with the international Jew, and it might be an interesting discussion.
Okay.
How are you doing, Ron? Hello.
I'm here. For that man that wants to look at the protocols, I've got them all listed on my website. He goes to http://gentlecynic. It's all one word.
Don't worry, Ron. I already got it typed into the chat room.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been to your site and looked at it.
Okay, then you look under articles, it'll say Protocols of Learned Elders of Zion. And that's,
okay.
I put that together.
I just want to let you know, Muniker, that my name's David, and I've got the books here. I've got a lot of copies of the protocols. I used to give them away to people, but I do have them. I appreciate that, though. That's good. You've got it on the site.
I put that together in about 90 days. I just got on a run there, and it just ran around the libraries and tossed it all together. I put that together about in 1996, I think.
Uh-huh.
So it's about 10 years old. But I wanted to have amused some of Bill's listeners with what I've been putting up on the Mein Kampf site. I got some images there. If you were to go there to the Mein Kampf site, for those that are online, they can go over to Media Library. And they can click on Image Library, like I'm doing right now. And I'll talk you through a couple of very interesting little images that I found. When you get onto there, on Image Galleries, you scroll down to Life Magazine. There's temporaries where when I gather up a bunch of images, I put them into a temporary file so I can see them when I'm done working with them and make corrections. Then I put them up in the big file up above. Actually, it's down below here, but it shows magazine World War II propaganda. Let's see, what do I have here? It's really good. Charlie Chaplin as Hitler. Okay. In Temporary 2, what we call a Life Magazine Temporary 2. If you click on that, there's this little guy, some guy dressed up as little boy in a Hitler-type uniform, painted a little mustache on. That guy's like about 9 months old, you know. And you see that, when you see that where it says Magazine Temporary 2, that's the one you want to click on. let's see, where do we want to go here? I have written down here. At the bottom of the page, well, on the top, it'll up left, it says air raid victim. That's an interesting one to read. Sometimes they put some commentary below the image when you click on it. But when you go scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll see that there's the Battle of Flanders. There's a whole bunch of that in there. I took that right out of the Life magazine, all the images and text that I felt was relevant. Nothing about the English and the Americans like that. But at the bottom of the page, you'll see where it shows 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, next, last. Click on number 2 if you're there. If not, you have to listen.
I have to listen because I can't. My computer's crashed.
Oh, okay. Well, over on the second row, about 3 in, it says Charlie Chaplin as Hitler, and it shows Chaplin in his role as in his movie called The Great Dictator. I've got that on video. It's really funny. But most people who really, really love Adolf Hitler, they hate it, but I think it's pretty funny because I can look at both sides and laugh and be serious at the same time. I had copied from Fortune magazine, February 1936, where it says, quote, "The greatest artist so far produced by the moving pictures, Hollywood, in other words, is a man named Chaplin, whom all Jews are proud to claim. Chaplin himself has denied that he is a Jew, and in fact seems to be the fact seems to be that one grandfather was Jewish." Now, I've read where the Jews will go back into your history, and if they can find a Jew in there, they'll put a hook in your mouth and just lead you around. So that's kind of interesting about how Chaplin, he allegedly denies that he was a Jew. There's some other ones on page 3. There's a, what is page 3? Clicking on number 3 at the bottom there, and eventually get there. Oh, yeah. Little Boy Hitler Blue. That's the one that you saw in the image where this little kid's dressed up. He's laying on a floor, and he took a picture, I guess, down to it. This guy, he's got his Nazi uniform on. If you want to go to, well, here's the one I really want to talk about. It's in temporary 3. Now, if you'll have to click back if you're in that one that was before, where you go back another one and you scroll down to Life Magazine Temporary 3, and then I'll read this because it's really interesting. You go down to what's called page 5, number 5 at the bottom. This is really interesting. It talks about is that it? Yeah, yeah. Okay, and it says War Stories from Germany, and there's 3 pages of it. And let's see which one I have here. This is, I click on War Stories from Germany, page 1. And then to enlarge that tiny little text, you press Control and Plus a couple of times, and it kind of gets bigger, you know. But it'll describe some things about, for example, there was a air raids in Stuttgart where the British couldn't find it because the Germans turned off all the lights. In the whole city, they couldn't find it. I mean, talk about cooperation. Those guys really cooperated. They couldn't find it. Well, all of a sudden, they got started getting bombed, and they found out that this German Baron had been putting a spotlight in his chimney and putting it up into the sky and flashing it on and off. He was in between one town and Stuttgart, and they followed that in, and he could bomb Stuttgart. Well,
that damn traitor. He must have been a Jew.
Well, his wife was a British citizen, which is about the same thing as a traitor. You know, that's what they had there. And so let's see now, if you go back and then click on War Stories from Germany, page 2, let's see what it says there. Oh, they talk about how to drink coffee in Germany. These are all from Life magazine, March 24th, 1941. This one's on page 18, and it talks about how the Germans handle coffee. They couldn't get any coffee, so they mixed all these various beans, you know, and they have this little four-step way of drinking coffee in Germany. So that's on War Stories from Germany, page 2.
And I've never had a coffee. You know, we had a few things. I kind of remember a coffee, you know, replacement. There was some kind of drink made out of some other stuff. It was never right. It nothing replaces coffee. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it was
they call
like
it, ersatz coffee. Right?
Yeah.
Remember that word? Yeah.
They mentioned that here, ersatz, yeah.
Coffee and tea are probably evil because they're only grown in places where we run into millions of aliens, right? I think it's a great temptation that Yahweh threw this stumbling block in our path, but I fall for it, you know.
Yeah, well, I do too every morning, you know.
I can't do without coffee and tea and chocolate and all this stuff that grows in these heathen lands. It's a damn shame that they should be our lands.
Yeah.
Negroes don't drink coffee.
Well, not our kind. Anyway, let's see. There was an article in there, again, this is still on the war stories in Germany, called The Hero, it's still on page 2, called The Hero That Came Back. And this is how concise it is. I picked out some really good articles that are humorous as well as serious, you know, because there's a lot of serious stuff in there, and I had to do something to lighten up my load here. There was this in Norway, I think it was. Yeah, wherever it is, Norway, there's a German warship, a cruiser, that got sunk by some British bombers. Well, on the poop deck, there stood a lone Nazi infantryman, his rifle at his side, his right arm raised in a Hitler salute. Bravely, he went down with the ship. It was a picture stirring to any Nazi heart. And when Berlin heard the news, the infantryman was made a national hero by the German radio and press. About 3 weeks later, a sensation was created when the same soldier turned up in Berlin with a contingent of German troops, home on leave from Norway. Amazed at the reception he received, he explained that he had been pulled out of the water and deposited ashore by a small German warship standing by the Blücher, which was sunk. He had then rejoined his unit and fought through the Norwegian campaign. Talk about a resurrection. So if you were to click back and go on War Stories in Germany, page 3, you'll see a memorial to the people who died in that ship, the Blücher, when it was sunk. Now, there's a flying Amazon at the bottom of the page. This is Life magazine, March 24, 1941, page 21. One night, a British reconnaissance plane was shot down near Stuttgart. I got to pronounce it right or I'm not doing too well. The pilot was pulled out of the wreckage, and to the astonishment of the bystanders, turned out to be a woman. She was a Canadian woman who at home had been a flying instructress. Notice how they... Both legs had to be amputated, I guess because of the injuries, you assume. According to one of the hospital attendants, the girl, she's probably in her 20s, but they call them girls then, was asked if she had any last requests to make, as it seemed likely she would die. Yes, she replied, send me to England and I'll be back in another bomber. What's wrong with these people, you know? Now, when you go back again to where you got those little images there, you click on number 4. This is the fourth page of War Stories from Germany. And this is where it gets really interesting. Oops, wait a minute. What happened to it? Well, let's see if I screwed up here somewhere. The last one, okay, number 4, yeah. Maybe it's on 4. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've lost it here. Because it was, I'm clicking even on my own computer here. It's fairly fast. Usually it's a lot slower when I'm working with the talk show, but,
What page are you on from the list? I'm on Flash Library 03. Is that the wrong?
This would be in the in Mein Kampf page.
Yeah, I'm on that.
Okay, it would be in, and you go down to Life Magazine Temporary 3. And this one says across the top, Image TID 29, page 5.
Okay.
So look for Life Magazine Temporary 3 and then go down and now click number 6.
And it's in the gallery. The gallery, is that where you are?
Yeah, it's in below media gallery. It says image gallery. Click on that. And then go down to Life Magazine Temporary 3.
Temporary?
Yeah, Temporary 3. And when you click on that, once you get those little 16 or 20 images up there, thumbnails they call them, go scroll to the bottom and click on number 6, because that's where I'm at now.
Let's see what I can get here. I thought I'm at Old Image Library I'm looking at.
Oh, no, you're too far down.
Oh, really? Okay.
Up higher, where it says speeches by others, below that, media library, and then image library is right in there. I'll read something while you're looking there.
Image library.
Yeah.
That it?
Yeah, image library.
All right, I get that. All right. Here we go.
You're only half as fast as I am. Okay, and then when you get there, go down to page 6, and then click on War Stories from Germany, page 4. And I'll read this. This is good. This is how disciplined the German soldiers were. They keep talking about how nasty they were and how it was terrible and on and on. The Huns and how they butchered people. I'll read it. It says, A Journey to the Border. This is from Life Reports, War Stories from Germany, Life Magazine, March 24, 1941. Page 22, and you can get that on the Mein Kampf image library, and it'll be mixed in with the rest of them. But you'll find. It says Americans reflect surprise that the persistent reports that German troops are all remarkably well behaved in some of the occupied countries. This is the result not only of traditional German army discipline, but also of the Nazi theory of law enforcement. An offender is not merely punished, but made an example of him. Chicago girl, American, probably an older woman, but a girl, was traveling on a German train to Holland. A German soldier entered her compartment and asked to see her papers. That's a classic quote, huh? After he had looked at them, he asked to see her purse. He opened it and removed all the money and left. Accustomed to the exchange restrictions for foreign money, the girl was not surprised at the incident, but thought the soldier's manner was a bit offensive. That's the tip. Okay? She asked a German officer if the procedure was normal. His face reddened, and he asked her if she could recognize a soldier. At the next stop, the officer ordered all the soldiers to line up on the station platform. He escorted the girl down the line until she paused in front of one soldier and said, That's the man. Are you sure? Said the officer. Yes, said the girl. The soldier was led off a few paces and shot. The rest of the soldiers were then ordered to get back on the train, and the trip was resumed. So this crap about the soldier Germans are out there just like a bunch of, Hell's Angels doing what they want is wrong. And then below that, this is a classic. This is funny. It's serious, but it really happened. I've got some other books that talk about this. Soldiers of Poland, it says, on the day that Germany invaded Poland, Polish cavalry, armed with sabers, received a manifesto or a message. Soldiers of Poland, the German tanks are made of papier-mâché. Charge them, and the day is ours, it said. As the invasion proceeded, hundreds of brave Polish cavalrymen were mowed down by German machine guns as they tried to hack away at German tanks with their swords. One body of Polish prisoners, being escorted to a prison camp behind the lines, passed a German tank column, which had halted at the side of the road. A man from Stuttgart was a member of this tank column. To the last man, he saw the puzzled Poles wrap their fists inquiringly on the sides of the tanks to discover whether they were really made of steel or cardboard. Isn't that amazing? Those Poles are stupid.
Yep.
Now, I remember talking years ago with a German who was captured in the war, and he was sent to Canada as a prisoner. When he got released, he stayed in Canada with a lot of the Germans up there in Canada. And he told me that when he was a paratrooper, and they went in somewhere in Poland, and whether they were dropped in or what, but he said that every time the British would come in, they send the Poles first, and the Germans would just knock those Poles down, you know, and then they'd address the English as best they could. But those Poles are really stupid. I mean, that just shows how stupid they are. They really believe those tanks are made of papier-mâché, you know. But there's a lot of other images on there, and I put some, when you click on them, I put some comments in sometimes. There's some submarine pictures in there, some battleships, the Graf Spee, I put some in there. There's a Deutschland, I put something in there. There's a lot of interesting pictures there on the Mein Kampf page. And I just got started on it one day, and I kept at it. And it takes me about a total of about 5 to 7 minutes to put one of those pictures up. It just takes a long time. It's just tedious, but it gets there. They're all related to some things on the Germanic side. There's plenty of the English stuff, but I take the Germanic side. So that's, if you had a chance to look at that, or if you will, that's something that's pretty interesting to look at. And I don't think I'll take up too much more of the time. I think this is something else that you want to talk about. I'm going to hang up and listen. Anybody have any questions on the Mein Kampf site as far as images?
Great images.
Yeah, I remember you called in once before, and Bill was talking about something. You mentioned the German sailors,
yes.
how they were saving the British sailors. That was on temporary one.
Yeah.
On page two, there's some other ones in here that you want to look at. If this on temporary three in page two, there's British sailors rescuing German sailors, and then there's something about Italian on page four there, or number four, Italian sailors rescuing German sailors. They didn't have any of this political stuff that you get, you know. They were just warriors, you know. And when they were down, they went over and they saved them. But the English were a little bit different. When the Bismarck was sunk, there was nobody else around there. The Germans are kind of stupid. I remember reading, and it's in the image there somewhere, a gallery. Wilhelm II said during the First World War, he admitted that the English are landlubbers. Those words, the English are, we Germans are landlubbers. They didn't know how to handle the sea. They didn't know how to send out flotillas. The Bismarck was kind of out there all by itself. That's stupid, you know. You're supposed to send out 10 or 15 ships to block those torpedoes. Well, they sank it. And yet the English decided, well, they said turn and ran and went away because they alleged there was a submarine in the area. Well, there were no subs in the area. You know. So the English handled it a little bit differently later on in the war than they did in the beginning. But those are some interesting things. Hitler, temporary three, on number four, you'll see Hitler on the Americas. He comments about North America and South America because there's a lot of Germans in Argentina. Hitler, a man on the mountain. There's another one, two pages there. A lot of interesting stuff in there that talks about the German that you never see in the movies, you never see in the history books. So that's why I'm going through there. Right now I'm stopped at about September of 1941, I think it is. I've got a little bit more to go. It was a long war. So you just keep an eye on it, and eventually those temporaries will be mixed in with the mess one that's down there called the Life Magazine Propaganda, World War II Propaganda. They'll all be mixed in. But you check on that page, and you look at the latest temporary, and you'll find my latest work in there. Okie dokes, that's about, I think, all I have to say.
We appreciate the work you've done on the Mein Kampf site. I know I do, and I know a lot of the people here do. It's great. I mean, that's a lot of the images you found are important to maintain.
Yeah, there's quite a lot more that I have to get, but it's well worth the effort. And it's amazing when you look at I know, Bill, you and I talked on the phone earlier about this. The government of the United States, which is not the same as the American people, the government of the United States had decided years before the war even started that they were going to declare war on Germany. On the Mein Kampf page, I think it's on the home page. Here, let me hit the home page. I think
right, it's right on the front page. 3 years before. It's incredible.
Yeah, 3 years before. There's a little thumbnail down there, and you can click on that if I can get to it. Where is it now? You get so much. Here, right at the bottom. October 31 of 1938, page 11, it says that they had, I'll click it here and I'll read the headline of the Life magazine. It says, America gets ready to fight Germany, Italy, and Japan. That was in 1938.
Yep.
You know, they were well planned at this. They knew exactly what they're going to do.
And then they're going to say the war started by a surprise attack.
Yeah.
My ass.
Yeah. Well, they've already proven, and there's been books written on the subject about how they
well, right. It's finally being admitted by the mainstream.
You know why? It's because all the guys that are responsible are dead.
Yeah, they give you 50 years, and then they... But did you put up any of that information? Was it Life or Time? One of those magazines came out with glowing articles about Hitler in the 30s.
Well, if it was in Life magazine, they put it up there.
I don't know. I think it was. It might have been Time.
I've got some Time images of covers that I sent to a historian that I'm helping finding.
Let me just interrupt for a minute. I know somebody out here on this island that's got thousands of copies. I think it's Life.
Yeah. What island are you talking about?
In Washington, in the San Juan Islands.
Yeah.
Well, there's some of those images he has, like especially like that one with the that this war was planned 3 years earlier, you know, in 1938. I would love to have the full size image.
Oh, yeah, the original. Yeah.
Yeah, you know that we haven't been able to find. Ron's only been able to find a reduced size.
Yeah, this is all online stuff. It's on the, in fact, when you go to the website, I'll tell you what it is here, the image library, and then you click on, down the bottom there, you'll find where it says the Life magazine World War II propaganda. The one that has a picture of the Bible and a German helmet on it right now, you'll see on the one the very top row says suggestions for better viewing offered by your presenter. That's me, your presenter. And it talks about how you can go to the Life magazine website and see these things directly. And you can enlarge them, and it's a lot clearer. And it shows you step-by-step how to do that. And then you can go to that page, and you can download that page. I explain that. It's a tedious problem, but you can do it. But getting the photocopy, or even if it was a camera, a digital camera image of the original page of that one about the three wars in advance, that would be perfect. You know, that would be a really good one to get. Does this man have those?
Would you be interested in talking with these? Lady out of they had stacks of some magazines down there. They got a huge place out here, and I forget. I think they were Life magazine.
Well, even if it was Newsweek or Time, I've been able to look at Time, but I haven't got there yet because I'm going through Life. Time magazine has a website available where they have some of their back issues, because I made some copies of this historian in England of Himmler. He's doing a biography on Himmler. So as I look around, every time I find an image, I send it to him, and some of them he's never seen before, which makes me feel pretty good. But nonetheless, I look for those. So if she has some Time magazines even, that would still be helpful. I could look through there and find out what Time has on their website and then ask if she could send us something like that. Depends if she's keeping them as a collection or if they just happen to stack them up like old newspapers.
Well, I mean, they've got years and years of them there.
Well, she must have. Well, you have to first find out if it's a collection, and then second, if she's willing to even depart with them for a little while we make photocopies or images of them.
Well, I've got a digital camera if it can be done properly.
Yeah,
I'll talk with her and see what she's got.
Okay, and you can let Bill know. It's probably best to send him an email because it
all
says
right.
Mein Kampf is his website, and all I do is put images up there. I've got some other things that I want to send him about communism in Germany and that sort of thing. I send it to him and by FileZilla, so he probably finds that. A lot of interesting stuff on communism in America, about Broadway, communism, Broadway, and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So when you can contact Bill about that, and he'll be able to make his decision.
Sure. You're also involved and familiar conversant or whatever with this Dearborn Independent paper?
Well, yeah, if you go to my website, thegentlecynic.net.
I had a question I wanted to ask you about one in particular. I don't know if you were listening. I read a little bit out of the Dearborn Independent issue of April 30, 1921,
uh-huh.
where they published part of an article of a pamphlet written by George Pitt Rivers and a letter in response to that article written by a Jew, Oscar Levy. And that's all in that article. It's about a five-page section in this book. I wonder if you had that, if it would be something. I don't know. I thought it was a good article and very revelatory of Jewish intrigue and manipulating and so forth.
This is
the way the article is, if you've ever read it, I don't know if you've ever read it or not, but if you've read it, you might understand or see what I'm saying or trying to get across on this thing.
This is part of the International Jew, or is this a separate document, a separate book?
Well, this is in a book, and I don't know if it's good. It's a book called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, and it's a thick paperback. It's a larger paperback. It's not like the little tiny pamphlet protocol.
Mm-hmm. There's quite a number of those out there. In fact, they're sort of like a tides of the moon, you know, like they come and go, and they get published a lot. Mine has a lot of annotations in it where I quote a number of things there. But I'm also on the website. I also have volume 1 through 4 of the International Jew from Ford. So the Levy is in there somewhere. I remember reading about Levy.
Yeah, Oscar. I don't remember
right now which one it's in, but you can look at those. Man. All four in there.
This tells that letter that he wrote to Pitt it reveals the mind of the Jews, and he comes across like he's, well, I'm going to tell you frankly, I agree with you, Mr. Pitt Rivers. Mm-hmm. You're right in your article, what you said here about the Jews, and let's come together and reason about this thing, you know.
reasoning with them.
Wow. Boy, it talks you right out of your eye teeth.
Well, I looked at my annotated version of the protocols of the book one, which is the introduction, and I didn't see that's a lot of detail in there. I didn't see anything with the name Levy.
It's in the Dearborn Independent. It'll be in the Ford newspaper articles. Ford.
Okay. If you want to find that, it's
the Dearborn Independent of April 30, 1921.
Okay. Well, if it's there, then it'll be in there. It'll probably be in mine too, as well.
I'll take a look and see. I had this book, so I've had it for years, and I'm rereading it, and along with some others. I happened upon that one today, that article.
Browse through the annotated versions above that, where it says Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, Book 1, the introduction, and Book 2 is the annotated text. There's like, you know, 500 pages of stuff in there, you know. Plenty of stuff that you could use and support.
Where are you you're on the website here, but
yeah, I'm in the gentlecynic.net website.
I there was a link to your annotated protocols on the Mein Kampf site, and I have a link to the unannotated protocols too. But the link to the annotated protocols is on the right hand side. Below the ongoing cultural war against Christianity, below that menu group and above the poll, right next to the map, like on my computer, it's right to the right of that map of Europe I have under the picture of Hitler. Mm. It's the annotated protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And I just realized that I still had that pointing at the old website before we made the General Cynic site, so I just updated that link.
Okay, yeah.
It'll go right to his Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion page. Because Unicker's addition to the protocols, have a lot of cross references to Henry Ford's writing that are useful.
Yeah, I could have put a lot more in it. One of these days, I'll sit back and I'll look what I have since then, 10 years worth of acquisitions, and I'll update it. But it's got plenty in there for anybody that wants to support their statements about the protocols. You know, with Ford and a whole bunch of people, a lot of Jewish writings. The bibliography is just, you know, super long as to what I relied on. So that'll be a good source for anybody that wants to get a better grasp of the protocols. Keep saying it's a forgery. Well, a forgery is if I signed your name to a check that's from your wallet, something like that, it looks like your name, therefore they think it is. Well, if somebody printed the protocols exactly as they had them, well, obviously it's a forgery, but it still looks like the original article.
Well, right. And you know something, if the forgeries are an Aryan invention, whoever did it must be a prophet, because everything in the protocols has come true.
Yeah.
So is it a prophecy or is it a conspiracy?
That's what Ford says. It's right here. It says on the home site for the protocols, the only statement, says Ford, the only statement I care to make about the protocols is that they tie in with what's going on. They are 16 years old at that time, and they have fitted the world situation up to this time. They fit now. That's Henry Ford.
And they fit now.
Yeah. Right. And even to this day, you know, if you want to grasp the Jewish mind of what's really going on, the protocols just.
Well, absolutely. And if they don't represent a planned conspiracy, then they're prophetic.
if it doesn't, then we're just dreaming.
I lean towards the conspiracy, not for nothing, but I lean towards the conspiracy.
Yeah. Like Bill would say, if we don't understand it, we're retarded.
Right.
I talk to them about the protocols, and I show them books and read a paragraph, and they, and they just turn, I don't know what it takes to.
I'll tell you what it takes. You, first of all, you got to know who you're talking to. I've seen people who I thought were regular people end up being Jews. So you got to be careful who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Second of all, you've got to sit there and give them just a little bit, just to test them. A lot of people will sit there and become defensive because they've been taught that the Jews are God's chosen people. And, you know, like one Jewish woman says, you can criticize God, but you cannot criticize the Jews.
Oh, absolutely.
So you have to sit there and just give them a little bit. Let them kind of feel. Water sinks slowly through marble head, okay? So you got to let it sink into their brain a little bit.
Well I'd rather crack it with a hammer and help it out.
You're right. Get the sculpture going.
Well, that's true. See, I guess there's two ways of looking at it. But nonetheless, you've got to ease them into it. That's how I got into it. I used to – one woman talked about the Old Testament. I said, oh, that's the Jews. I had no idea what I was talking about. Turns out that it's not about the Jews at all. But at the time, I just threw back this anti-Jewish thing, and I tossed it all out. Well, these people are the same way. You have to sort of slowly turn their head a little bit, and then they look at it, and pretty soon they want more. When they start talking about it and ask more, then you've got it open. But until you really have touched on them a little bit at a time, just little quips and not much more. Don't push it. Just touch them. And then they'll finally be touched enough to where it's like a tablet of clay. You know, you have to mark the tablet of clay and just write. And pretty soon they recognize what you're saying, and then they're in. But it takes a little bit. And it's not a time distance. It's a mental movement. When they move their mind, then you're ready. It could take a year or it could take a day, but you just have to kind of recognize it.
I've seen that that approach. Well, that's not really my approach, but I'm understanding and appreciating the concept that you're expressing there. But I have a friend here that was completely opposed to anything I talked about, like the Old Testament and the New Testament being the same thing practically and all tied together. He didn't want to hear it, and he'd get up and walk away sometimes, you know, talking about Billy Graham being a whatever, you know, the temple priest.
He's a Jew.
And yeah, and oh boy, he really flew off. I printed out an article and gave it to him about Billy Graham. He brought it back and said, "Oh man, here, you can have this back. I don't want that. That's nothing but lies. Who wrote that?" He wouldn't even read it. It was very clearly, you know, I gave it to him, so I didn't interfere in his thinking process while he was reading, but he still wouldn't accept it. You know, he couldn't mull it over in his mind and come to it. I don't have any trouble with this. I grew up completely free and off the wall as far as any religious ritualistic type thinking and behavior. I never had any of that. I didn't want any of it. And from the time I was little, and I never did. But now in the last few years, I've become inquiring and I've learned. I've been exposed to something that I never knew about before through Bill and Eli and Greg Howard and the rest of the fellows that get on there and talk about the Bible and interpret it. Now, you know, it makes sense. Now,
yeah.
You know,
when people call him Yahshua, some people call him Jesus. But when the Master Christian went and chose his 12, he was very careful. And when you go talking to people about this matter, you have to be very careful. If you get resistance, just touch on it once in a while. If they keep resisting, just be careful, because you don't want to isolate yourself to the point where nobody talks to you. But at the same time, you have to enlighten them. So you have to just touch them and just let it go. Let it sink in. It may take a while. But if they're so resistant, forget them. Just forget them. Look at what Jesus said about the guy. He said, "I have to bury my father." He says, "What do I do?" And he says, "Sell what you have." In other words, you know, give up what you got and follow me. He says, "Well, I have to bury my father." He said, "Let the dead bury the dead."
Right.
And this guy's dead. Let him bury his own. That's what you have to do. You really have to give up on white people and look for people who are more receptive to the word. You just can't rely on the fact that they're going to all of a sudden say, "Oh, yeah, that's right." You might as well get a Democrat to become a Republican, you know.
Well, right. And the problem that we all have is getting over our own fleshly desire to win a convert.
Yeah, we have to give up on trying to convince them.
To make somebody see that we're right.
Yeah,
and that's a fleshly desire, and it's hard to get over. It's hard to walk away from an argument.
It's hard to walk away from losing the truth to somebody. You know what it is. What I mean, you want them to get it, and
absolutely. That's part of it too. That's a huge part of it.
Yeah, but you haven't lost anything. As long as you're gaining and understanding the truth, that's all you have to worry about. This is your experience, not theirs. They're just in your life. You know,
good
you have
point.
To look
that's
at that
point.
And just recognize that you have to learn as much as you can, and when the opportunity arises, you'll help people with it. But if it doesn't, you still keep on learning. It's your experience, not theirs. All you have to worry about is know what you know and just keep at it until you can touch on someone that responds favorably, and then you work with them. It's like sales, like door-to-door sales.
Mm-hmm.
What it is emotional or spiritual door-to-door sales. You just have to tap on every man's door until you got one that opens it, and even then you're not sure they're going to do it until you talk to them and they hear it, and then they recognize it. And if they don't, just go on to the next one. You know, just keep going, like Johnny Appleseed throwing his apple seeds out. The trees grow, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Job is to learn, so I wouldn't worry too much about these other people.
Yeah, that sales point is a good one. I used to do some sales, and I remember I went to a place somewhere, maybe in Maryland or something, and looking for work and selling something. The guy said, "What can you do?" I said, "Well, I've done this and that." He said, "Here," and he reached in his pocket and he pulled out a wooden pencil. It was sharpened, eraser on it.
I don't need a wooden pencil.
Yeah, he pulled a pencil out of his pocket and handed it to him. He said, "Here, sell me this pencil." And I said, "What?"
Okay.
So he
did
said,
it have an eraser on the top?
Yeah, it did. Right. He said, "Sell me this pencil." And I said, "What do you want? What do you want me to do?" He said, you know, what he was looking for to see what kind of a salesman I was. I want to show you this, the wood in this pencil. You know where it comes from, what kind of wood it is, you know how carefully it's selected. The lead is really good lead. I know. I've gone to the plant where they make it. If you, you know, if you're an honest, you know, if you know what your product is, you have to know it's good or don't sell it if it isn't good and you don't believe it is. But if it's a good pencil, then you can tell people it's good and sell it that way. You know, move it to somebody else. Let them get the benefit of something worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Did he buy your pencil? Did he buy his own pencil?
I sold it back to him.
Well, that's what you have to do. But not everybody gives you the pencil to sell back to them.
That's great. I know. I never forgot that. That was pretty good move. I like that.
You can run it back. Okie dokes. Well,
that's a good point. Thanks for the salesmanship tip there.
Okay. That's how I do it. And I find myself very rarely talking to people about this subject because around here, you know, they're more liberal-minded. This is a university town, and they're more liberal-minded. And I told my daughter, she says, oh, it's a very liberal town. I says, that's okay. I'll be like a preacher in a bar. I don't have any hopes of converting anybody, so I can say whatever I want. That's what you got to do. You have to kind of plan your work and work your plan and target your people and just knock on those doors and see what happens. But don't be too disappointed. They're not going to go to hell. They don't know. They'll get there eventually, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Bill, is there anything else you need?
No, I'm good. Thank you. And you're doing us a great service.
I sent you something in the mail. You'll be getting in a couple of days.
I'm sure it'll be another trick candy bar or something.
Well, no, not this time. It'll warm your heart. It'll warm your mom's heart. It will warm your grandma's heart, but it won't warm Samson's heart because he doesn't know how to read. but he does chew, and it's just some sage advice on chewing. In fact, I sent you an email about chewing. Did you get
that? Oh, you should see my arms and legs. my forearms are like pincushions. Today I was wrestling with him in the yard, and his fang got stuck. In the palm of my hand.
Yeah, pumpkin.
And he was hanging on it. And it was like, whoa, dog.
What you need to do is like the real Samson, you get these leather things around the wrist, goes up the forearm.
Well, when he's older, I won't get, you know, he won't bother me as much because he's, you know, I don't care how big and strong he gets, his teeth won't be as sharp.
You're hoping.
I have. A lot of experience with doggy teeth, believe me.
Yeah. Okay.
But right. Puppy teeth are rough. Puppy teeth are like razors.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, that's right. They're pretty sharp. Well, if anybody wants to see poor Bill's dog, he can go to your website. He can go to the Gentle Cynic website. Down there, there's three pictures of Samson as a pup. He's a pretty nice guy. I'll have to meet him one of these days.
Yeah, he's about twice that size now, maybe three times that size.
Really? Oh,
he's getting pretty big.
Wow, send me some pictures. I'll put it up there in place.
Yeah, I got to try to take some pictures this way. I've had this sprained ankle, and it's really hampered me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I was running in the park 2 weeks ago tomorrow and stepped in a gopher hole, and it's my ankle came out from under me, and I haven't been the same since.
Ooh.
I ran for years and never had a problem. Hmm. I never had an injury. I ran for 8 years in prison. I never had an injury. On a track that looked like a typical New York City street. I mean,
you know,
potholes all over the place, and they didn't keep up anything. I run in the snow. I can run on the ice. I'd go out and run 3 miles on the ice in 10-degree weather, think nothing about it.
Hmm.
But, I don't know what the hell I did. I stepped in a gopher hole. And I can only attribute it to 15 months of sitting on my butt, not running, and not having the strength in my ankles that I should.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. It's I'm getting soft sitting here in front of this computer, you know. I figure I'm going to make it a point this summer to get back in shape, kind of. And I get running. I get myself to where I could run a half mile again, because it takes a while. You don't go out overnight and do it.
Yeah. Well, another problem you have here is that you're getting more popular. And it's just not, it's not a vanity thing, but you're just getting more popular. More people come to you, more people send you emails, and they ask questions, and it takes time to respond.
Oh, I just gave up on my emails. I'm sorry. I got 1,400 emails. I just, and that's after I eliminated the junk, and I just can't do it.
Well, then I'll call you from now on. I won't send you any more emails. I'll just call you on the phone.
Yeah, I just can't. I got about 100 of your emails flagged, I swear, in a folder. That I can't get to them. I just can't. I would do nothing else but that.
Yeah, you need a well, I told you what you needed before. I won't say it on the phone. It's a little secretary is what you need.
Yeah, I need a little blonde secretary about, you know, maybe about 20 years my junior. And
yeah, probably about
I'm getting lustful now. I should shut my mouth.
A tall one, about 5'9", so it's compatible.
Tall? How about 6'1", maybe?
Okay. Otherwise, just nose to nose, you know, they said about Ava Gardner and Mickey Rooney, right?
Yeah, I teased my daughter once, and it didn't get, you know, I said I always wanted a girlfriend about 6'1". I had a daughter, but I couldn't have a girlfriend. My daughter is about 6'1.5".
Gee whiz, that's rare to find a husband for her.
Yeah, she had a huge problem, and she still does. She don't know it, but she still does.
Well, I'm not that tall, so I'm spared. I don't know if I could tolerate William Fink as my father-in-law. He'd say, "What are you doing over there?"
Well, my daughter couldn't tolerate me as a father, so.
Oh, well. Okay, that puts her out for sure.
Yeah, she's done.
Well, not entirely. They have to, you know, the same thing with David. You just got to kind of drop the seeds and let them grow. When they see it, they'll see it.
Oh, no, she hates me because I'm a hater. I'm a hater, and she absolutely despises me for it.
Yeah, but when she realizes you're not, then what happens? All of a sudden, everything changes. The whole picture changes. No, it's like they took a photograph of Billy the Kid when he was a little punk ass with his rifle on the side, you know, and his pistol, and they found out that the popular photograph of Billy the Kid was reversed. He wasn't left-handed, he was right-handed. They just reversed the negative to where he held a gun in his left hand, and they thought somehow he was left-handed. So somebody finally looked at it and found out that the little opening where you put the cartridges in, the right side of the rifle of his Winchester, was in the wrong position. Then he realized that, same thing with her. As soon as she finds out that you're loading her ammo in the proper side of the gun, she'll recognize that you're really shooting at the proper enemy.
Yeah, well, somehow I don't think she's going to find out until the judgment day. But that's
well,
all right.
Well,
like Pilgrim said, she'll find out one way or another.
Yeah.
She'll find out.
That's right. Okay, well, I think I'll hang up and I'll listen to the rest of the show. It's already, well, it's
well,
definitely...
yeah, I'm going to, I think I'm going to cut it short unless David or John have anything to say. It's.
They better not. It's what, midnight your time, 12:30. 12:30 your time.
Oh, it is getting late, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thanks very much for your time, your
right.
effort, your help, your conversation. It's been a real nice talking with you.
I'll look through the some of the other images, and for those that are online that can look at them, I'll pick out some more that are pretty interesting to look at. Maybe next week, I guess. We'll see how much time I spend on the phone here, is how much time I have left. It's always in, or maybe I can send Bill something. It's probably easier for me to call in because he doesn't read his emails. Okay, dokes. I will say goodbye, or Auf Wiedersehen, as they say in, you know, the old country.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Ron. Praise
you. Welcome.
Thank you. Bye. Bless you.
Good night.
Good night. Okay,
well,
so is that it? Is that it, John? Is that it, David? I mean.
Yeah, I think so. Let you go, Bill. You got to take care of your ankle, get your dog for a walk, get something to eat, I guess.
Yeah, it's 12:30. It's about time for my third dinner. I eat about 6 times a day. I'm a pig.
Yeah.
And the dog probably needs a walk. I haven't even seen him the last hour.
I had a run-in with a cat today over at my friend's house. Not a run-in, but cat comes running in the back door with a little bird in its mouth. Second time this has happened when I was there. So I call him Blackie. They call him Midnight. but I like black cats. But he's a good cat. He came running in and sitting down, and I said, "Blackie, let go of that bird." And I ran over to it, and he dropped it, and it fluttered away. It was a little, just a baby bird, and it fluttered away, and that cat just pounced. But he was just playing with it. He wasn't killing it or anything. And so finally we got it away from him. I took the bird outside and put it on top of John's car, his little truck-like thing there. And I went out later, and it had left. It got away. I guess it flew away. So, yeah, they're not like your dogs. Dogs don't do that, but cats do. They like to chase that stuff. The other cat they've got brings in mice, rats and snakes, and Blackie brings in the birds.
Yeah, there's a cat next door here. He's always leaving his dead presents on the front porch. Torn up chipmunks and stuff like that. My grandmother hates him because she loves the little chipmunks, and she hates the mean cat that kills the chipmunks and the birds.
Well, I don't if I can stop it. I'll stop them, but it's what they do, so.
Yeah, you can't stop them.
I mean,
it's great when he gets the field mice before they get in the house, but
yeah.
He doesn't get the real pests. I mean, the cat doesn't get the deer when he's eating my berries. That's what I need.
You need to get a lion or something out there.
Yeah, really. I need a bigger cat.
When the pup grows up, Samson grows up, and you put him on a long leash.
Take care of that cat. That'll keep that cat away, that's for sure.
Keep the cat away, and then probably if he can get on where he can move around the garden area, deer out there, he'd run out there and scare him off.
Yeah, right. I'm just afraid to let Samson run loose because I have a there's nothing in the back of my house but a farmer's field. And it's acres and acres. And if he gets cut loose into that wood, I'll probably never see him again.
Yeah, you see how they put up those steel wires, those old clothesline type steel wires that they used to hang clothes on, and between two posts, like 50 or 100 feet apart, and then you put a good collar around the dog and a nice leash long enough, you know, like maybe a 20-foot leash, and then you clip it over the steel line there. See, and he runs around like a trolley wire.
Yeah, that would be probably a good idea if I could find something like that.
That lets them run and run and run. And it's sturdy and hold them. They can't get away.
Yeah, well, it has to be. He's going to be about 100 pounds. He gets full grown.
Yep.
That's my guess anyway.
Yeah.
He's already about 30, and he's only 12 weeks old. He's got paws like the size of boxing gloves.
They crack me up. Their paws or something else. Great big. They're good dogs. They're good dogs.
Okay, I'm going to cut this off, and that's it. And thank you, David, and thank you, John. And
thanks very much, Bill.
Praise Yahweh, and good night.
Good night.